of an employment period in the dim and distant past, depending on what age you are, when you were younger than almost all, if not all, of your colleagues. And looking back now, you're fairly confident that you were more productive or that you actually worked harder. And given that we're talking about minimum wage, service sector and retail are going to be particularly prominent. So I start off thinking this is perfectly fair, and then the old bloke inside starts thinking it's outrageous.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, inflation in the UK has dropped to its lowest level for almost a year. The main rate, which is measured by the Consumer Prices Index, fell to 3% in January, down from 3.4% in December. It means that most prices are still rising, but not as quickly as before. Christian May from City AM has told LBC it could also be good news for those hoping for a cheaper mortgage.
The government will be able to say, look, interest rates are coming down. It's good news if you're on tracker funds of mortgages, for example. It's going to help the supply of mortgages, which the housing sector desperately needs. And look, inflation is coming down. It's coming down at this dramatic rate. So aren't we doing well? It's worth noting still, I think, by the way, that 3% inflation is still a full percentage point above the 2% Bank of England target.
Four UK police forces are now looking into claims in the Jeffrey Epstein files. Essex Police is looking at suggestions that the late sex offender used his private jet to fly women in and out through Stansted Airport. Stansted says it doesn't manage passengers on private aircraft. The government is reportedly considering slowing down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. Labour promised to remove age bans and to increase the wages of 18 to 20-year-olds so they're paid the same as those over the age of 21. Ministers have ruled out a reversal in the election promise. Tina McKenzie is from the Federation of Small Businesses and says smaller employers can't cope with much more.
National insurance is up. Business rates are up, statutory sick pay going up, employment rights getting widened. If they think that small employers can handle all of that, as well as the increase in the minimum wage, then good luck.
Thousands of pharmacy owners have written to the Health Secretary, warning that they risk imminent closure due to financial pressures. The National Pharmacy Association says branches in England are closing at a rate of one a week. And pedicabs in London are now regulated for the first time. It follows complaints about bad driving, overcharging and antisocial behaviour. Transport for London says drivers will now have to have a licence, pass a safety test and hold a driving theory test certificate. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 75 at £10,632. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunny spells. Outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC, from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten, and I think that this is a good old-fashioned phone-in. We haven't had one of those for a while. A simple government proposal to raise the minimum wage for people under 21 to the rate that people 21 and over currently receive. It's a difference of £2.21 an hour, which if you're on £10 an hour, as 18 to 20-year-olds on minimum wage currently are, it makes quite a difference over the course of a whole shift. And we're not at our best when I just come on the radio and say, well, what do you think about that? But equally, some days it is a question you can answer more or less immediately. I wonder what are you thinking about now? So I say to you, should young people in the workplace get paid the same as older people? Should everybody doing the same job get paid the same wage, or is there a case for paying 18 to 20-year-olds less than a 21-year-old or a 22-year-old? just because the arguments that are trotted out by wealth or business owners, and of course they're not the same thing, plenty of business owners are far from wealthy, but they are, if you like, in charge of the capital. Just because the same arguments are trotted out all the time by largely the same people doesn't mean that they're always wrong. You'll remember when they introduced minimum wage, everybody was about to go bankrupt. When they, every single time that governments tried to do something to improve the lot of the average worker, there is uproar across the print media because they have all got tame think tanks in their back pocket who will jump up and down to complain. Business can't possibly afford that. But it doesn't mean that it's always false any more than it's clearly not always true. Minimum wage introductions, minimum wage legislation has not brought about the commercial Armageddon that was predicted by all the people who are currently complaining about plans to raise the minimum wage for 18, 19 and 20 year olds. Am I making sense? Do you see what I mean? It may be true that this would be a bad thing to do. I don't want to conduct the phone in from the perspective of the workers up the workers and bosses down with the bosses. What you want to happen is for the relatively high numbers of young people who can't currently get work or who aren't in work to find it easier to get work. And I can understand why. I think I can understand why. Can I understand why? Increasing their minimum wage would make it less likely for them to find the jobs that are currently going to the people who are not getting paid the minimum wage. Do you see what I mean? You see why it's a little bit, it could be a little bit trickier than first impressions allow. But when I ask you that question, should the youngest members of the workforce get paid the same as everybody else, what do you immediately think of? What story, what period of your life, what moment are you immediately thinking of? When you compare the job you did as a school leaver or perhaps still as a student to what the job being done by older colleagues was. See, I'm going to come up with a strong opinion by 10:15, but at the moment I haven't actually got one. Because, well, so there was this bloke, right, when I worked in retail, my last job in retail. I had several. And he was obsessed with the fact, I mean genuinely obsessed, to the point that he would show me his payslip every month. He was obsessed with the fact that his taxes were paying for my university education. And he hadn't gone to university. And he felt it was hideously wrong that he should be paying for me, who was already from a more privileged background than him, to be going to university to enhance my employment prospects moving forward. And I don't know if you had many moments like this when you were young, but it did actually prompt me to rethink my politics a little bit. I know I grew up in a very different world from the one that 19-year-olds inhabit today. My university education was more or less free. I owed some money. I had some loans for maintenance and things like that, but nothing for tuition or anything like that. A different world, almost unrecognizable to people aged 19, 20 listening to this today. But that's what it was like for us. That's what it's still like for a lot of people in other countries. And if you were older than me, you didn't even have to borrow money. There wasn't even a student loan system for your maintenance. That would be provided by the local education authority after some rough means testing on your parents' income. But I remember this bloke. I remember his name. I remember his jewellery. He used to wear big, clunky bling. He was one of the first people I encountered. Big signet rings. So Andy Hughes was talking to us. Not that kind of signet ring, but like sovereign rings. Working in a very posh menswear shop. And he cut a certain dash. He had a certain elan. And he was routinely one of the highest earners when it came to commission. But guess who else was? Me. And I got paid an hourly rate that was much less than his because I was 19 and he was 50. And at the time, I thought that was probably unfair. The political change that he brought about in me was not the nothing to do with the fact that we were paid differently. It was the fact because I thought he kind of had a point when it came to the tuition fees. I shouldn't go, I've got to stop doing this, Keith. Someone should be in charge of this program. I can't go off on a tangent about tuition fees and class and privilege and background. It's got absolutely nothing to do. Oh, Lord, I'm doing the weave. It's got absolutely nothing to do with the conversation that I want to have. But you know how my brain works. I'm suddenly more interested in that than I am in that. So we'll park that for another day. But I'm thinking of him, and I wonder who you're thinking of. What moment in your life are you thinking of now when you address the question of whether or not an 18-year-old, 19, 20-year-old in the workforce should get paid the same as the 50-year-old, never mind the 25-year-old or the 22-year-old? That's the phone-in, so you can book your place on the board now, 03456060973, and we can all come at that. You don't need to be in the correct demographic or a business owner or any of those things. You can come at it as a moral. So we'll start at 10 past 10 with a moral question. Morally, should a 19-year-old get paid the same as a 50-year-old? 03456060973. If, of course, the 50-year-old is still unfortunate enough to be on the minimum wage. And then you sort of come at it slightly differently, and you think about it in terms of productivity. And I suspect that the more young and vigorous you are, then in many jobs that receive the minimum wage, the more young and vigorous you are, the more productive you will be, and therefore the more money you're making for your company. But then in the service sector and in retail, where most minimum wage jobs will be, there are softer skills that are not measurable solely by sales and how much money you take over the till. There's always a colleague, isn't there, to whom you refer the complaints or the difficult customer, and that colleague will have a lot more experience and a lot more nous, if you like, and knowledge on how to deal with certain situations. But now you're thinking of a 19-year-old that you worked with 30 years ago who was like Kofi Annan. They were so good at diplomacy and negotiations. And so why should they get paid less than the miserable old git over there who spends his entire shift waiting for the counting the minutes until his next tea break? And then you come to this thing that I hope doesn't happen to me. This thing that you hope doesn't happen to me. I hope, you may not care one way or the other, but I think this is a terrible time to be young. If you make a list of things that you were frightened of when you were 16, let's say, if you're of a certain age, you've got nuclear war, right? Older than me, really. I don't think we were frightened about nuclear war. Just at the back end of it. What about now? Now you're frightened of everything. You're frightened of the fact that the world is being run by climate change deniers. The sea levels are rising. Humanity is under threat. AI is coming for all the jobs that you could reasonably have developed an ambition to do 10 years ago. Having this conversation last night, I had a little mini reunion with some of my old Daily Express colleagues. It's 25 years since I'd seen some of them last night. And AI was a major topic of conversation. Just still, almost gobsmacked at the speed with which it's coming for everything. You know, people who were making a living writing things being replaced by AI, photographers being replaced by AI. And we're in our 50s. Imagine being 16 today and being 10, 6 years ago and making a list of the jobs that you quite fancy doing and then just slowly crossing them off one by one as they became jobs, barristers, as they became jobs that would be replaced by AI. So it's, I think, and I hope I'm wrong, I've got young people and they're, I've got young people, I've got children, and they're on a fairly even keel. I'm not suggesting everyone's walking around with big rain clouds over their heads, but I'd rather be 16 in 1988 than be 16 in 2026. I think. In terms of things that I'm frightened of in the future. And I have to hold that thought in my head. Because otherwise, I do become a little bit, can we say gittish? I become a little bit gittish. I become a little bit like my old colleague who just sort of thought that I was less than him because I was young. No matter how much money I put over the till, no matter how good I was at the job, no matter how quick I learned the skills of marking with chalk a suit so that we could get the trousers shortened or the sleeves adjusted or take in the side seams or let out the back seam on the trousers, it didn't. He just felt that he should be paid more than me because he was a grown-up and I was a kid. And when I started looking at this story earlier this morning, I kind of found myself feeling something similar to that. There should just be a gradation. There's something. Is it dishonorable, disrespectful to pay a 40-year-old man what an 18-year-old gets? It can feel very wrong to me, that. But why? Because an 18-year-old is an adult. An 18-year-old is a taxpayer. An 18-year-old has agency, has autonomy. An 18-year-old can be making just as big a contribution to a company as a 50-year-old. If you're going to be rewarding experience, then you're not going to be talking about older people on the minimum wage. You're rewarding experience by increasing their wage above the bottom threshold, above the basement level of the minimum wage. So I don't think that quite works as an answer. And I don't know if this is true today, but back in the day, there was a sense that you'd be better off hiring a thrusting young undergraduate to do you a summer holiday job than perhaps a 30-year-old person who was not as motivated or indeed as hungry. That's a generalization, I know, but it's what a former manager in menswear said to me once. So the moral question is it fair to pay a younger person less than an older person simply because of their age? They're doing an identical job. 0345 60 60 973. Then if you're a boss, I want to know what you would do. Just to tell me straight up whether or not an increase in minimum wage will make you less likely to hire a 20-year-old who in a year will become a 21-year-old to whom you have to pay the higher rate anyway. Because I'm struggling. That's why I began by saying they can't always be wrong when they claim they can't afford it. Business owners can't. Well, do you remember that brilliant question that a texter sent in when we were talking to somebody about, I think, pub taxes or something, and he was explaining how he was going to have to shut one of his venues if things didn't improve. And you sent me a text saying, ask him what he drives. So I asked him what he drove, and it was like a 70 grand car. And suddenly the idea that he can't afford to pay four people minimum wage anymore just fell apart in a way, like a cheap suit. But I've never really run a business, so maybe there are considerations there that I don't fully understand. But they are queuing up today to tell me, or they are queuing up to tell the media, that if they have to pay a 20-year-old £12.21 an hour instead of £10 an hour, then they can't afford to hire the 20-year-old, who will become a 21-year-old in about, well, possibly in a week's time, but in at least a year's time, at the most a year's time, and then they will have to pay them £12.21. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. The moral question? Is it, what do you think? What do you think? Should the 19-year-old have a lower minimum wage than the 25-year-old? Just straight up, yes or no. And then, of course, on this programme, you have to provide me with the why as well. 0345 60 60 973. And then the personal. So the first question is moral. Everyone can answer it from any perspective that they want. And the second question is personal, the experience-based conversation about why, as a boss or as an employee, current or former, your insight into this is informed not by morality or conscience, but by experience and memory. And I'm equally keen to hear, answers from both perspectives, the moral and the evidential, or the moral and the personal, the political. We got there in the end. The political, is it fair, and the personal. Why does your answer to that question draw upon your own experiences and memories? Hit the numbers now. You will get through.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
The customer service is really good.
People are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 9 years running.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment you relax, knowing that Barclays advanced tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Oh, just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 19 minutes after 10, and it's got a lot of echoes of previous conversations about minimum wage legislation, but there's more of a fairness issue here. The government is reportedly poised to reverse plans to pay the youngest members of the workforce the same minimum wage as everybody else. It's only a 3-year window, 18 to 21, in which you get £10 an hour, and the plans would raise that to £12.21 an hour. Is it fair on a political level, and is it reasonable on a personal level? Siobhan's on the Wirral. Siobhan, what would you like to say?
Hello, lots of things, but I'm coming at it from two broad aspects, and both of which argue why young people deserve to be paid the same as an older person for doing a job. So I work within a university, and I employ a lot of students from within my university. I manage the theatres, and my events team who work with me, some of them are studying event management. And when we used to differentiate between paying the two different rates, my argument to my employer, to my manager, to get this changed, is that I could have somebody who is younger but has been with me on the team for 2 years, covered loads of shifts, taken all of the in-place training schemes that I offer my staff.
Yes.
And has to be paid less than somebody who might
be. They don't have to be paid less.
Well, no. At this time, this was the policy within my. And this
I suppose one bit missing from this is if an employer wants to pay a young person more, there's nothing stopping them from doing so.
Yes. So the initial compromise that I made with my employer that is if somebody had taken all of the training that was offered to them and then had completed a certain number of hours of service with me, that they could be paid at a higher rate.
Okay.
That was the same as the people who were getting it just by benefit of their being older. And that actually the staff that I was training from scratch would then have only relevant experience within my organisational culture, which for me...
Age is not the defining factor on how attractive a proposition an employee is. It's got very little to do with it, in fact, in your experience, and therefore it is a little bit, A, arbitrary, and B, unfair.
Yeah, and can actually, if you've come from an organisation that doesn't have the same culture and practices as you, so like with me, looking after my customers, giving them the best service and the best public safety, that is my benchmark, whereas other organisations, if getting away with doing as little as possible is the culture within that organisation, it's not a good fit for my operation, and that needs training out of somebody.
Forgive me, I'm not completely following what you're saying. That was probably my fault, but it's fairly clear that sometimes you'll have a 19-year-old who's got more experience than a 25-year-old if you're looking to hire new. But what about the simple notion that when you are young, you start lower on the ladder than you expect to be when you're older? Just a sort of simple gradation of wage inflation, wage improvement.
This is where my other approach comes in. So the national living wage is supposed to be an anti-poverty wage.
Right.
And at the moment, the way that it's set by the government is lower than what the National Living Wage Foundation recommends as being a wage that's needed to lift people out of poverty.
Which says it all, really, doesn't it?
The young people historically haven't had the same entitlement to housing benefit. They may not be in a long-term stable relationship that allows them to share living costs with a partner.
Yeah, this is very true.
And so actually the cost of living in this country isn't less for young people, except for the fact that they may not, and this is not something that is purely defined by age, they may not be parents yet, so they may not have dependents.
Statistically less likely to be parents if they're 18 to 21, but it's not impossible, and you're legislating for a demographic of... I guess there's no way anyone can argue that there is a general case for stating that you will be worse at the job if you're 18 to 21. No one can really argue that. And if you're not rewarding experience, if you're still on minimum wage when you've got lots of experience and ability and you're over 21, then your employer is not very good. Your employer is unfair.
A lot of the industry where they put people on national minimum wage bar work.
Yes.
You know, where you need to have flexibility, a lack of sort
and then
of
being
home
then
life
being young makes you a more attractive employee,
energy,
and a more attractive employee should be paid more. So you're passionately opposed to the idea of the government reversing on this, and they should stay on this course and raise the wage for the under 21 year olds up to where it is for the 21 and above year olds.
Yeah, fundamentally, I believe that if somebody goes out and does 40 hours a week in employment...
This is the phone-in. Yeah, no, I thought I did too, but I've got this, I can't shake this, look, gristle in my brain that sort of wants dignity was the word I was looking for, not honour. A bit of dignity in being a bit older. Is that mad? Am I sounding mad? A 25-year-old should have, or a 40-year-old, should have a bit of dignity in knowing that they're earning a bit more than the 18-year-old who started last. There it is. What time is it? 25 minutes after 10. I needed Siobhan to be the midwife to my opinion on this one. There's something, the word dignity plays a role in this conversation. Is that outdated? Does that sound silly? Is that actually anti-youth? Associating dignity with age? Why does a young person not deserve dignity? All right, I'm going to level with you. This is obviously, and this isn't the levelling bit because you know this already, this is not something, unless there is an extraordinary reversal of fortunes on my personal horizon, the minimum wage is not something that I expect to be on between now and the moment when I meet my maker. But if I was doing a job in the sort of sectors I worked in before I somehow managed to inveigle my way into journalism, and if I hadn't progressed, if I was like the bloke I told you about at the outset, my menswear colleague, most of our income then was commission-based rather than basic wage. So if I was in my 50s, as I am now, and you were 18, and you started work on the same shop floor as me tomorrow, would I feel a loss of dignity at the fact you were being paid the same as me? I think I would. But now I'm going to imagine being the 18-year-old and I've turned up for work and you're in your 50s and I'm being paid the same as you. Would I feel... I'm being paid less than you. Would I feel aggrieved? That's the question, isn't it? Would I feel aggrieved if I was being paid less than you for doing the same job? Or would I feel deferential to your age and your experience? Are we talking about respecting your elders here? But anyway, that's the word I want you to focus on next, the notion of dignity. There is a dignity in paying your older employees more than your brand new ones. And that's why 21 is an interesting threshold, because it's not like they're going to be stuck on it indefinitely. So something about the idea of you starting work tomorrow at the age of 18 on your 18th birthday, I've just got my gold clock for long service and we're on the same wage. I don't know, because we'd be doing the same job, so maybe I am sounding bonkers. Andy's in Morden. Andy, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hello, good morning, James. I think, for me, what it comes down to is the experience that younger person has got. I mean, bear in mind that if they're an 18-year-old, they will have just come straight out of education and going into a job, so they will have no experience of a specific job. Now, I'm only going to come at this from... trade base, because I run a small company and it's very, very hands on. Now, sure. I wouldn't expect an 18, 19-year-old to even remotely understand what I would be talking about in terms of the technical stuff that we do.
But I wouldn't, and I may sound naive here, I wouldn't be expecting you to be paying the minimum wage to somebody who needs to understand technical stuff.
Just getting back to my point.
I am exploring your point with you. So the person comes in on minimum wage, they don't have the knowledge of the technical stuff. The person who's got the knowledge of the technical stuff shouldn't be on minimum wage.
No, absolutely not. So when you've got somebody who is much older and they decide they want to change careers, which I often hear, they want to get out of an office-based thing and then work with their hands.
Yeah. I did that. It was a lovely phone-in on Friday, actually. Exactly.
Yeah,
that
I listened to it.
Nice, wasn't it?
It was really good. Mm. So you wouldn't, if you're a 50-year-old or 40-year-old going into, I don't know, carpentry or plumbing or something like that, you wouldn't necessarily expect to receive the same sort of wages as a man or a person, an operative who's been in that job.
No, but
for the
I mean, do you really pay the minimum wage to skilled and experienced people as a boss?
No, absolutely
so
not.
So then you're having a false debate. So the 25-year-old with skills and experience is not going to be on £12.21 an hour. So the 25-year-old with no skills and experience, who is on minimum wage, is going to be on £12.21 an hour. And the 18-year-old with no skills and experience is going to be currently on £10 an hour. You pay an inexperienced and unskilled 40-year-old should be getting the same as what the inexperienced and unskilled 18-year-old gets. Otherwise, it's not fair.
Yes, I think I absolutely agree with you on that.
But I thought you were ringing in to disagree with me.
No, I wasn't not disagreeing with you at all. No, I've trained three guys up to come through in my trade, and all of them started off on a very low wage, and all of them are on what they would expect.
Yeah, so you've got three people who want to come in at entry level. One's 18, one's 25, and one's 40. Yeah. Would you want to pay the 18-year-old less than the other two?
No, if they've all got the same skill sets, then no.
They haven't got any skill set at all.
No, so if they've not got
so it would be age. Because you did. The producer just confirmed. You rang in to say you'd be less likely to employ a younger person if they increased the minimum wage like this. So, it's great that you've changed your mind live on the radio, but I want to be sure that you realise that's what's happened.
I wouldn't want to employ an 18-year-old on a higher wage when they can't do the job.
No, of course, but the same would be true of a 50-year-old. That's the point. It's the bottom line. It's the basement level. It's the minimum wage. And if you're saying to a 25-year-old who's not got any skills or experience, or isn't, you know, demonstrating particular proclivity for a task, that they are worth more than an 18-year-old who might be better. I don't know. It's a pendulum hour, this. I wonder where I'll be at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned to find out. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
The government is reportedly considering slowing down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. Labour promised to remove age bans and to increase the wages of 18 to 20-year-olds so they're paid the same as those aged over the age of 21. Inflation in the UK has dropped to its lowest level for almost a year. The main rate, which is measured by the Consumer Prices Index, fell to 3% in January, down from 3.4% in December. And one of the country's leading psychiatrists has warned that there's a silent mental health pandemic in England. Dr. Laddie Smith says people can't get the help needed because of overwhelmed and under-resourced services. LBC weather dry, with dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England, with some sunny spells throughout the day. Outbreaks of rain and hill snow elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
It was just another day. A familiar drive through familiar country. But then, just around the corner, came the unexpected. He'd let his speed creep a little too high as he approached a bend. And he was no longer driving at the right speed for the road. The scary thing is, he didn't even realize. Driving even a little too fast for the situation is a major cause of collisions, especially on country roads where you don't know what's around the corner. Think. Don't let your speed creep.
The Henry sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10:34. I don't know whether it happens to you, but you spend some time contemplating a topic and you think it's quite complex and you realise that perhaps it isn't. Maybe I'm being too generous. This is just about trying to get away with paying people as little as possible so you can keep more of it for yourself, isn't it? So you see the front page of the Times, and I'm sorry that I'm susceptible to this still, having spent my entire life trying, or most of my working life, trying to point out how easily manipulated we all are. Oh, yeah, well, told, yeah, won't somebody think of the bosses? Why shouldn't I pay a 19-year-old £10 an hour? £10 an hour to wash dishes or pick potatoes or serve drinks? Because if I had to pay them £2.21 an hour, that's £2.21 less that I'd be able to keep. And if you've got 10 employees, that's £22.10 an hour that I'd be able to keep. So of course I'm going to hire a younger person because I get to keep the money otherwise. And then you dress it up as, oh, my business won't survive. My business won't survive if I have to pay people £12.21 an hour. If your business won't survive, if you have to pay people £12.21 an hour, then as a great believer in capitalism and free market economics, you should recognise that your business is unviable. I find it, of all the things I find extraordinary, and you know I find a lot of things extraordinary, and you know that by the extraordinary amount of times I use the word extraordinary. But of all the things I find extraordinary, it is the idea of wages paid by companies that make millions of pounds, let's say supermarkets, being topped up by universal credit. Because they're not paying enough to their staff for their staff to have a living wage. The percentage of people on universal credit who are in full-time work is extraordinary. And yet a lot of them will be working for employers that are shifting dividends to their shareholders at a rate of knots. And now you're supposed to tell me to think of the small business person. I haven't got shareholders, it's just me. If you're seriously telling me that you can't afford to pay that person £12.21 an hour, you have to pay them £10. What are you going to do when they turn 21? Sack them? Does that happen? Actually, that's a proper question. 0345 6060973. Do you get sacked from a job when you are 20 years and 364 days old because you're working for an Ebenezer Scrooge who begrudges you the £2.21 that they'd have to pay you the next day? I hate it when this happens, but I also love it. I hate it when I start off in good faith thinking that a story is nuanced and complicated and not part of the sort of Wolfie Smith school of politics, wealth versus labour, capital versus worker. And then, I don't know why, it takes a moment, a couple of calls for my thoughts to crystallise, and I can't believe we're sitting here in 2026 having a conversation about whether businesses should be required to pay 20-year-old adults £12.21 an hour as a basic minimum. £12.21 an hour as a basic minimum. How gaslit and groomed have we been as a country that this is not only a debate, but also a debate that's reached the front page of the Times with reports that a Labour government, the government of Angela Rayner, well, not for now, I grant you, but not long ago and soon, is apparently poised to reverse this? To say, no, carry on paying the kids £10 an hour because won't somebody think of the business people who are going to lose £2.21 an hour per... come on. This is a lot simpler than I thought, right? Right? Jacob's in Reading. Jacob, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. Hello, I'm a big fan of the show.
You're very kind.
a bit nervous.
It's only me.
Yeah, I know. So morally, I think they should be paid the same because... minimum wage is a floor, not a ceiling.
Yeah.
So you should be paid more if you're older, and if you're more experienced, you shouldn't be.
Yeah, so it's the basic minimum should be the same. And then as you accrue experience and you make yourself a more valuable employee, a decent employer will recognise that with an increase in wage.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're doing more managerial kind of jobs, if you're doing supervisory jobs, then you should be paid more rather than less than someone on.
How old are you? I mean, you may just have a very youthful voice, but you sound younger than me. How old are you now?
Right, I'm 30.
Oh, okay. I thought you might be even younger than that. So where do you think, what did you hear when you heard this old bloke on the radio using the word dignity? If you and I started in a job tomorrow, well, you're 30, but if you were 18 and we started in a job tomorrow, it would be undignified to pay you the same as me. Because that's an authentic position that I hold.
Right.
But I think it's also at the same time a bit ridiculous, and I'd like to know where it comes from.
So I do understand that in some ways, because if you're older and you've worked maybe the same job for a certain number of years, then you might think, yes, I should be paid more. However, if you're in a minimum wage job, then you most likely should have, if you're older.
I'm not angry with you, am I? I'm angry with me.
I couldn't say that.
No, but if you're coming in to do a job and you're getting paid the same as me and you're wet behind the ears, exactly, and that's the only job I've got, I'm angry with me.
So you're probably thinking, oh, I should have done more.
And I'm not going to do that, because that would involve self-reflection and self-criticism. So I'm just going to attack you for being young, really. How dare you come along here and earn the same as me? I'm 54 years old. I've got a whole lifetime of experience behind me, and I've done so little with that lifetime that I'm worth the same as someone who's left school yesterday. Oh, that's brutal. I know that wasn't the point you were making, but that is where you have led me to. So the angry people on a phone-in like this are not angry with the young people for earning the same as them, which is what Labour will hopefully stick to, although on recent form, it's hard to imagine them sticking to anything, isn't it? But you're angry with you. What? And so then when does the boss come into it? The boss comes into it and essentially some, not all, want to pay people as little as possible. Some are the opposite of that. Some bosses are brilliant. I had Mark Constantine on Full Disclosure. Is he on this latest episode? Or was he on the one before? He was on the one before last. Who was on this week's? Who did we play out on Friday? It will come to me in a moment. But Mark Constantine, who founded Lush, the cosmetics company, which is a brilliant company in just about every imaginable way. But also, you can tell when you go into those shops that the staff love being there. And the idea that the primary objective of that company would be to rinse as much money from the wages bill as they can is patently absurd. He's not the only business person, of course, that I've had on Full Disclosure. We also had, I always get them mixed up because there's two brothers. It's James and Edward Timpson. The one that wasn't an MP, I think, is James. Had him on as well, and he makes the case. Oh, Sadiq Khan was on blooming Full Disclosure, wasn't he, last week? Of course he was. But James Timpson makes the case that by looking after his employees much better than other employers do, they actually make him more money. So he makes the capitalist case for benign employers, and Timpsons have holiday homes that their staff can use, and they have really sort of generous schemes that recognize and reward. And other companies, if the job is to make as much money as you can in the short term, you're going to go after the wages bill. And you might be out of business in 5 years. I don't know. I was thinking out loud. From Jacob to Jordan. That's got quite a biblical flavour, that, hasn't it? Jordan, what would you like to say?
Is it respect, not dignity?
Could be either. But respect should be earned.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I manage a manufacturing plant in Milton Keynes. And
okay.
I think it's an interesting conversation, but there's a couple of areas here, like manufacturing, for example. Yes, everybody should start on the same, but as I was explaining to your colleague, somebody with experience absolutely does deserve to be paid more, because you've got two people on a production line, one's 20, one's 30, with experience. If something is going to go wrong, that 30-year-old is more likely to pick it up and therefore is rewarded. Then you've got kind of tenure. So tenure is definitely rewarded.
I don't know if you're in charge of wages, but a lot of employers aren't going to pay people more unless they absolutely have to. And that's why you need legislation in
absolutely. This. Absolutely. I do explain this. Some companies will. We do. Right. We reward tenure, hard work, all the rest of it. And this can go so many different ways.
I know.
You've got the thing, this whole gender pay gap argument. The gents tend to ask for pay rises, whereas the women tend to not.
Really?
And if you don't, as you said, absolutely. And if you don't tend to ask for it, as you said, why should we go to somebody else and offer a pay rise when, as you've just said, in the manufacturing sector.
Well, this is why I like legislation. And, you know, I'm not a communist by any stretch of the imagination. I'm a capitalist, obviously. Everybody is, really, when push comes to shove. But I like capitalism to be regulated. And regulations should include bottom line wages guaranteed for everybody, and they shouldn't be different according to age if you are at the same level in the workforce. And if you're not at the same level in the workforce, then you should be getting paid more. And if you're not getting paid more, how much of it is your own fault? Because when you say that men are more likely to ask for women, you're close to sort of saying if women are getting paid less, it's their own fault. That may not be your intention, but that's the impression that I'm getting. Well, it is their own fault, though, if they haven't asked for a pay rise, mate.
It is and it isn't. I mean, yes, you're right.
Yeah, come on. Well, you're not a politician.
As you say, there could be legislation, there could be certain things put in place. But at the end, but we're talking about right now. You know, right now in this particular environment, if somebody asks for a pay rise, a range of things gets looked at. As I was saying, the manufacturing sector at the moment is like the farming sector. There is a huge amount of labour that goes into what we do. If you look at China, they don't pay their people anything. So they're a lot more economically viable for manufacturers across the country, across Europe, across the world, to go to China to build something, because they don't have the same quality of life expected here in the UK, which is why legislation for a minimum wage is good.
Yes.
But at the same time, we cannot allow that to circumnavigate experience of people that are having somebody come in and say, no, I deserve to be on the same amount. Do you know what I mean? I do and I don't.
I'm just to play your game for a minute. I do and I don't. I struggle with the numbers, but that's a sign of my privilege. I struggle with the idea of paying anybody £10 an hour to, you know, even a university student. When you look at the cost of living and you look at the sort of basic requirements of even just going out to watch a film at the cinema, it seems to be a million miles removed from the relationship between income and expenditure when I was that age. But in terms of this 3-year window, it's absolute rollocks to claim that businesses can't afford to pay a 19-year-old £12.21 an hour and they're going to go under if they are no longer able to pay them £10 an hour, isn't it? I mean, China is an interesting comparison, but no business is going to go under as a consequence of having to pay 18 months worth of £2.21 an hour to the workforce until they turn 21 anyway.
I don't know about that. If you want to go through the numbers, I'll go through them with you. But, I mean, it's quite scary.
So what happens when they turn 21? Do you fire them?
No, not at all. It's about the other commercial aspects of the business need to kick in. So whether you're charging more, but then are you now non-competitive? And the customer goes, well, I'm okay, I'm going to go to China.
Yeah, but this is an argument to pay people Chinese wages. I mean, well, I'm sure you realise that. You bring China into the conversation and you might as well say, well, why don't we pay people £1 an hour? You know, what needs one? £10 an hour is a pittance. And the idea that they're going to leave it there rather than raise it to £12.21 an hour, which is a little bit more than a pittance, I just don't buy it. If your business can't sustain that kind of income without you pretending that there's a sort of Chinese rival snapping at your heels, then your business is not efficient, or whatever word it is that a management consultant would use. You're a nice bloke, mate. Sorry, I don't mean to come across as if I'm tearing a strip off you, but I don't buy these arguments. It's the same argument I heard about minimum wage. Everyone was going to go bust if they brought in minimum wage. Well, they did, and spoiler alert, nobody went bust. It's 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Nigel Farage getting his top team together. I've never personally been convinced that Reform would win it outright, but the polling suggests that they are going to be, by some distance, the largest party, were there to be an election tomorrow, and therefore could probably do something with the Conservatives in order to get them over the line, and the Tories would do it, by the way. They are addicted to being in some form of power.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help, showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato.
Whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
There's a point there from Jacob about the gender pay gap. It's a completely different phone in, but it's one we should probably have. And men are routinely paid more than women for the same job. And at this point, we trot out familiar old canards about childcare and taking time off to have children and returning to the workplace. But if you're doing the same job, you should be on the same whack. And if you're a woman, you are less likely to be on the same whack as a male colleague than a male colleague is. That's just a matter of fact across all sorts of sectors. And one answer given, and Jordan wasn't in any way suggesting that it is a woman's fault that they find themselves in that position, but at the same time, he was explaining that in his experience, men are more likely to ask for a pay rise. So can I do that as a man? Can I say how much of the gender pay gap is the woman worker's fault? I don't know that I'd be entirely comfortable asking that question, but I kind of want to. Another day. Another phone in for another day. 10:51 is the time. But who honestly believes, and apparently the answer to this is the Labour government do, but who honestly believes that insisting that companies stop paying young people £10 an hour and instead pay them £12.21 an hour is going to be the difference between survival and failure? And where do all the free market vampires go on days like this? Getting their violins out for the employers while simultaneously holding, or at least they'll be back in the Daily Telegraph tomorrow, arguing that businesses should be free to do whatever they want in order to thrive and survive, and that if you can't cut the mustard, then you've got to get out of the kitchen, or whatever metaphor it is that you would prefer me to mix today. I just don't get it. Amy's in Nottingham. Amy, what do you reckon?
Hi, James. Lovely to speak to you. Big fan of the show.
Thank you. You have, I don't know, this doesn't sound weird, Amy, but you have my favourite accent. Your part of the East Midlands is, for some reason, rooted in my dim and distant past. It's the accent that most warms the cockles of my heart.
Thank you.
Or should I say midook? Is it midook?
Midook, yeah, midook.
What made you pick up the phone?
I was just listening to you, and I just had a different opinion to share, which is rare, because normally I agree with you on most things,
go on,
to be honest. But I actually have direct experience of being employed in Nottingham when I was 15 up to 18, being paid lower than someone older than me. And I don't actually think it was that bad a thing. The reason being is, so when I was 15, I was employed as a waitress at a local golf club. It was supporting my sixth form studies, and I was able to work alongside kind of studying, and it gave me a foot in the door. to be able to get more jobs when I was at uni. And then ultimately, I feel like even though I was paid less, it opened the door for me to be able to get some experience that benefited me later on.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I started. Not in a golf club. This is where my opinion started this morning, in that sense that it's almost like a sort of unofficial apprenticeship that you're doing.
Exactly right. That's what I told your producer, to be honest.
But the golf club is keeping the money that they should have been paying you. And you were doing just as an efficient job after your first five shifts. You were just as good at the job as someone who'd been there for 10 years.
Well, I don't know that I'd agree, to be honest. Were. We used to do a lot of weddings, and I used to drop a lot of cutlery on people. And while I was learning the job, to be personally honest with you, I wasn't that great.
Well, all right, then let me come at it from another angle. 15 to 18 is not what we're discussing here. I don't even know what the law is regarding. It's harder than ever, I think, to get a job when you're that age now. But if you were 18, if you'd left school, and this wasn't a pocket money job or a holiday job, this was your income, would it have been fair for you to be on less money, almost sort of a 20% less than the person over the road who was just two and a half years older than you?
Yeah, so this is where I think it's the difference between part-time and full-time is really important, and whether or not it is intended to be a foot in the door, part-time supplementary income to support you, or a full-time role. I think in the case of full-time entering the labour market, absolutely, we shouldn't discriminate against younger people. But if it is a foot in the door opportunity or part-time supplementary wage, then I think it's fair enough, because I also think those kind of jobs, you know, would I want to give that job to a 15-year-old when I could? I have to pay her the same as, you know, someone a bit older, a bit more mature, a bit more experienced. You might be.
It's a trade-off. I mean, it's a trade-off between what you describe and the fear that a worker is being exploited, and I suppose that is one of the costs of capitalism. Is the employer has quite a lot of power in that, and you and I can cross our fingers and hope that they're not exploiting you, and we can think of examples, your early life not being one of them, where it felt right and fair that you'd earn less than an older colleague. But to have that bottom line, to have that basement when you are 18 enshrined in law, I think we do agree on that. I don't think you feel that a 19-year-old starting a full-time job tomorrow should be on less than a 21-year-old simply because of the numbers on their birth certificate.
No, I absolutely don't. And I think it's just the difference to me between, you know, what that job is to somebody.
Precisely, and where you are in life. And you know, what's happened now, I'm going to blame you for this entirely, Amy. We've now got another fear that the Labour government is about to abandon a policy that by rights it should stick to because of its values and because of its commitment to the working people of this country. In this case, the working 18 to 21-year-olds. And how many people beat me to it? Amy, thank you. I look forward to your next call to the programme. How many people beat me to it? The quotes that I normally pepper the programme with, and then I forget about them for a couple of years, and then I start peppering the programme with them again. The most obvious is probably the Orwell, isn't it? There was truth and there was untruth, and if you clung on to the truth, even against the whole world, you were not mad. It's a beautiful line there, so relevant to covering Trump and elements of UK politics over the last 10 years. But on issues like this, the tea towel. What's the tea towel? Keith, get the tea towel. What's the quote on the tea towel when we're having conversations like this? It's a Nyrin Bevan. How can wealth persuade poverty to use its political freedom to keep wealth in power? Here lies the whole art of conservative politics in the 20th century. Now, I swap out the word poverty for the word labour or workers. How can wealth persuade workers to use its political freedom to keep wealth in power? Here lies the whole art of conservative politics in the 20th century. And I swap out keep wealth in power to serve the interests of wealth. And so now the Times newspaper this morning and sundry other people dedicated to persuading people that they deserve to be paid less than they deserve. That's what they're using their power for. 18 to 21, the government must reverse this. We can't. It's like the school fees argument all over again. No such thing as poverty in this country for certain members of the right wing until they put VAT on school fees, at which point the public and private schools of the United Kingdom turn out to be full of people living in penury who barely be able to scrape together enough to heat the house if they're required to pay VAT on the school fees for their children. Extraordinary levels of hypocrisy and denial. And I wonder if I fell into that trap earlier today. I suspect I probably did. Susan's in Crawley. Susan, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning, James. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, I heard the conversation on the radio this morning. I don't normally call into radio stations, but...
Don't say it like that. Like, don't say it like you think you're better than us. No. You're not all that, Susan. Honestly, I don't normally... I don't normally talk to people from Crawley, Susan, but I'm prepared to make an exception in your case.
I appreciate it, James. My husband and I, without sounding like the Queen, we run a small family-owned cleaning company. And from day one, I've always made a point of making sure that all of my team, regardless whether they're 16 or 65, everybody has always had the same hourly wage. And I'm a strong advocate for that because I expect the same level of service from everybody. I want a consistent service within the business. I want to create a culture that motivates.
Yes.
I mean, in the UK, people are really good at saying, oh, young people, they don't want to work. Young people, they've got no desire to work. But if you don't motivate them, if you don't give them a fair start and make them aware that create the culture where they are motivated to work. Okay, so this is fair. You know, I'm getting the same wage. But also on the flip side of that, you have to set their expectations. And I expect the same level of service. You know, so don't come to me with, I'm 16, I shouldn't do this.
No, I understand that. But does it, to take your logic to the next floor.
Sure.
Doesn't it unmotivate the 40-year-old who's working for you?
No, because I like to feel that we... It depends on the culture that you embed into your business.
Yeah.
What we try to do as a business, my husband and I, is that we try to make sure that we go out to work with the team. I don't do anything that they don't do. I train every member of my team. I make sure that within the business, not only from the team's perspective to us, but to the customer, everything is consistent. So everything is fair, it's balanced. You know, we try our best to be the best.
I like this. So you are primus inter pares, first among equals. And that's perfectly reasonable. That's the kind of capitalism I like. And it means that your workforce are equals.
100%. But that also means that as a team, what we try to do is if I have a younger member of the team, 16, 17, and I also like to feel that when they do come on board and they realise they're getting paid significantly more than somebody else, they work harder. They want to work harder. You know, and it's really nice to see them flourish because then I feel that that's kind of like the foundation for them.
So much of the conversation, and I mean, it's interesting the sector that you're in the cleaning sector, because that would be an area where people would claim that, oh no, if we have to pay them this, then we'd actually go under. To which my slightly unqualified response would be, well, if you're honestly going to go under, if you have to pay people a decent wage, then you're in the wrong business yourself.
Well, this is it. You have to, as a business owner, you have to be mindful of all your costs and you have to, you know, consider that when you go to the customer, in essence. But it's about providing that quality service. If you want,
I like
quality,
it. No, you know, this is it. You've closed it down. You've finished it off for me. I think it'd be an absolute bloody disaster if Labour abandoned this plan, which means they almost certainly will. Would you like a free advert for your company? You don't have to. It's entirely up to you.
You know what? Our work speaks for itself, so there I appreciate it, James. So thank you very much.
Whoa, that's me told. First of all, she slags off the radio phone-in format, and then she declines the opportunity to have a free radio advert. That's why I never talk to people from Crawley. Susan, thank you very much. Thank you. I enjoyed that conversation. 11:01 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I shouldn't call them fat jabs. Every time I call them fat jabs, you send me nice and measured reminders as to why that kind of language is unhelpful and sometimes quite triggering and unhelpful. So I'm sorry that I use that phrase, and I can't apologise for it without using the phrase again, and I am conscious of the fact that I probably won't remember never to use it again in the future, but I promise you I'll try. So weight loss jabs are back in the news. There's also a very heartbreaking warning from the head of the Royal College of Psychiatrists about a silent mental health pandemic, and somewhere between those two conversations our next hour will unfold.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the government is reportedly considering slowing down plans to make the minimum wage the same for adults of all ages. Labour promised at the last election to remove age bans by the end of this parliament. New figures show the jobless rate among young people is at its worst level for more than a decade. The Chancellor, Rachel Rees, was asked this morning if she plans to delay the proposals to allow businesses to employ more young people.
We already have incentives to hire young people with the apprenticeship rate of the minimum wage, but also for no national insurance contributions for the youngest of workers. But we do recognise there are challenges, and that is why we're extending the number of further education college places, extending the number of apprenticeship places to help young people get the skills and the experience that they need to move into work.
Inflation in the UK has dropped to its lowest level for almost a year. The main rate, which is measured by the Consumer Prices Index, fell to 3%, down from 3.4%. Ukrainian negotiators say after just 2 hours, the second day of talks with Russian officials have ended in Geneva. President Volodymyr Zelensky described yesterday's discussions as difficult. One of the country's leading psychiatrists has warned that there's a silent mental health pandemic in England. Dr. Lade Smith says people can't get the help needed because of overwhelmed and under-resourced services. Dr. Smith has told LBC there's a risk the problem could spiral out of control.
The thing about these conditions is that they primarily affect young people. 75% arise before the age of 24, 50% before the age of 14. And that means that they have a much greater, profound and much more long-lasting effect on people's lives. It's really clear that this is significantly affecting not only these individuals' lives, it's affecting the productivity of the country and therefore the economic growth of the country.
The government says it's invested an extra £688 million this year in mental health services. And pedicabs in London are now regulated for the first time. Drivers will now have to have a licence, pass a safety test and hold a driving theory test certificate. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 106 at 10,662. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine. Outbreaks of rain elsewhere. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 6 minutes after 11, so we'll do both. We'll talk about the latest news regarding weight loss jabs now, and then in the next hour we'll have a look at what the head of the Royal College of Psychiatry has to say about a mental health pandemic. We sometimes find ourselves moving at a slightly more gentle pace in the final hour of the programme. Not always, and it's not always deliberate. Sometimes we can move at a slightly more gentle pace in the middle hour or even the first hour of the programme. But I am drawn towards that. I was also, absolutely delighted last night to meet a young man whose mother introduced him to LBC and who he credits this programme in particular with calming him down and meaning that he drives more carefully now. So he's a calmer driver. His mum said, you've got to start listening to James on LBC because it'll calm you down and you won't drive like a maniac anymore. And Darrell came up to me outside a fashionable London night spot and thanked me personally for this. And I promised I'd say hello to his mum, Linda, from Fulham, because you're spreading the word, Linda. Not only are you spreading the word, but we've managed to get Darrell to slow down a bit, which is good news for everybody concerned, including fellow road users. I love that. And it speaks to how less combative the programme, by which I mean me, has become as a consequence of many things, growing up, parenting, but also, of course, as I've told you many times in the past, of benefiting from some rather excellent therapy. So the conversation that we'll have in the next hour about mental health might turn out to be quite important to you, even though you may not realise that at this point, at this moment. I am yet to sign up. Unlike therapy, I am yet to sign up to Mounjaro or Wegovy or Ozempic. The so-called weight loss jabs that continue to look like miracle cures. Well, they continue to walk like miracle cures and talk like miracle cures. But do they quack? like miracle cures. What do AI and weight loss jabs have in common? Just with regards to you and me, with regards to the time that we spend together every day. What do weight loss jabs and AI have in common? We don't need to wait for a news story to have one of our regular catch-ups, but we usually do, is what they have in common. Because they have both appeared in our orbits relatively recently. They're not things that we were talking about 5 years ago or even 10 years ago. There's no PMQs today, if you were wondering how we were going to be able to have that conversation in the next hour. God, you're ahead of me most of the time, and I get paid to be here. So it's because I'm 54. There's no PMQs. They're on half term or recess or whatever they call it. So that's why we will be having a normal phone-in in the next hour. I haven't signed up for these things, but we do periodically just catch up on whether things are still looking as amazing as they did at the outset and as they have done thus far. Had a couple of wobbles. I think that there are a couple of conditions that you have to look out for if you're on them, and the dangers of not making lifestyle changes while you're having the weight loss jabs mean perhaps that you will pile the weight back on when you come off them. But if you make the relative weight lifestyle changes, which get a lot easier in as a consequence of the weight coming off, then it can actually be a life-changing experience. But here is today's research by the Health Foundation. 79% of prescriptions are for women. What do you think the age range where the uptake is highest is? Do you want to have a guess? I don't know if anyone can answer that question objectively, because we're all much more embedded in our own age range, aren't we, than we are in any other. But if you could turn off your personal demographic statistics and answer, what age range of women do you think is most likely to be on a weight loss jab? What would you say? So it's 30 to 39-year-olds, which I don't think will shock anybody. Women are much more likely to be on them. People in the most deprived regions of the country are a third less likely to be using them, even though obesity rates are significantly higher in poorer regions. So this, for me, is the beginning of the backlash, but the potential beginnings of the backlash. Because I have done a few phone-ins on whether or not weight loss jabs are good for us, whether they are good for you. And I am, again, still not entirely persuaded that taking away effort from the process of losing weight is a psychologically healthy thing. I mean, call me an idiot if you want. Don't shout it, though. And obviously, if you're listening on headphones in public, don't shout it ever. But call me an idiot if you want. If you were overweight, if you felt that you needed to lose weight and you successfully did so, had you done so through a regime of good counseling and changing your diet and taking up more exercise, I would feel very differently towards you, insofar as any of it is my business whatsoever, but I would feel very differently towards you, I think, than I would if you had simply gone on the weight loss jabs. But then I see people who've been on the weight loss jabs, and I don't find myself thinking less of them or thinking ill of them. So before it started, I kind of did the calculative prediction of how I will respond to you when you lose a lot of weight as a consequence of taking the jab. And I thought that I'd be, yeah, well, you know, it doesn't really count, does it? It doesn't really count. But the people I know who've done it, I do find myself feeling almost proud of, or certainly admiring. I find myself admiring them. And I don't think I'm admiring them any less or any more than I would be if they had lost the weight through more traditional means. So that's shifted a bit for me, is what I'm trying to say. But what I want to talk about today, I mean, we'll partly do the anybody having regrets yet? 03456060973. Is it working for you? 03456060973. We've had those phone-ins before. But I want to talk about whether or not it might actually be damaging society. Because, well, for two reasons. Jacob reminded us in the last hour, no, Jordan it was in the last hour, reminded us about the gender pay gap. Now, women are conditioned in our societies to be a lot more conscious of their weight than men are. And it's a terrible thing, in my opinion. Women of a certain age, my mum's generation in particular, were so obsessed with dieting and weight loss that they went through all manner of tortures, self-inflicted tortures, and self-image horribly damaged by perceptions of beauty and perceptions of thinness. And the mad thing about it is, as you know, of course, that it changes with historical eras. You know, to go back to the era of Botticelli or Rubens, then being more curvaceous was considered to be considerably more attractive than being thin, because being thin was a sign of poverty. It meant that you couldn't afford 3 square meals a day. And so it is women, and I know some men are affected by it as well, and I know that eating disorders sadly have grown among young men in the course of the years that I've been doing this job. But women are under a lot more pressure from society to be thin. And these statistics suggest that the weight loss jabs are adding to that pressure. You no longer have any excuse for not conforming to the body shape that society says you should have. I might be overthinking it. If I am, you'll tell me on 03456060973. So that's the first reason why I think that they might be bad for the whole of society as opposed to for the individual users. And the second reason is the obesity thing. I beg your pardon, is the poverty thing. There's a really stark class divide now. People living in wealthy areas are much, much more likely to use weight loss injections than people living in the regions where obesity rates are significantly higher. So I think that we might be unintentionally... I think that we might be unintentionally reversing progress that has been made in the area of brainwashing women in thinking that they need to be thin to be beautiful, and creating a society in which obesity becomes increasingly conflated with poverty. So fatness, and I use that word advisedly because I want it to sound pejorative, because that's the society that I'm worried that we're heading towards, becomes a consequence of poverty. We're creating a society via these injections that puts more pressure on women to be slim and makes it even harder for poor women and men to lose weight. So you end up more demonized, more stigmatized, and more depressed, and quite possibly bigger as well. So I don't know. I mean, there are two ways into this. There's the personal and there's the political. Hey, just like the last hour. So the personal is, I remain fascinated by this, as I do with the AI. I'll let you know when I think we've run out of road on this question, and or when phone-ins have turned into exercises and everybody ringing in to say exactly the same thing. But, you know, is it working for you? 03456060973. Negative stories possibly more welcome than positive ones. But that on the political, if you... And take my word for it, OK? I don't want to have an argument about whether the figures are reliable or not. Women are... I mean, 6 or 7 times more likely to be doing this than men. And wealthier women are measurably more likely to be doing it than less wealthy women, which means that thinness, slimness, is once again becoming something that women are feeling compelled to pursue, and that money, rather than self-discipline or education, is becoming the way in which you can pursue it. So is it going to be a bad thing for society? I've got another question that I want to ask you as well. But I don't know whether it's a little bit irresponsible. And when I look at these numbers, I look at the fact that for every sort of almost 20,000 women that are on the weight loss jab, there's only about 3,000 men. And as you make your way through life, you see couples... It's rarely going to be the case that they are of measurably different sizes. People are normally more or less the same. Look, I'll tell you what the third question is, but I don't want you to rush to answer this one and exclude my attempts to get an intellectual conversation going about the possible impact on the whole of society. What's it like when your partner's on it and you're not? In fact, why aren't more men on it, given that obesity rates among men are not going to be measurably lower than obesity rates among women? I've already answered that, haven't I? It's because society puts a lot more pressure on women to be thin than it does upon men. But what's it like when your partner's on it? And does it put pressure on a relationship when your partner loses an awful lot of weight and you haven't? That's a very personal question that I hope you trust me enough to answer. The political question is whether or not making obesity a sign, a more visible sign of poverty is a scary and dangerous path to go down. And then on the similar tip, the idea that society is returning to the days where women will be increasingly pilloried and demonized for not being thin enough. Am I overthinking it, or have I just pointed out something that you were either already worrying about or have started worrying about now? 03456060973.
This is LBC.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's best family electric SUV of the year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Oh, hello, love. Good day.
Right. Thanks for joining this all-staff meeting.
It's just you and me.
So, I think that we need to revisit tonight's dinner plans.
Okay.
Busy day. A lot of KPIs. A lot of KPIs. Gonna need you to order some spaghetti, tomatoes, a bottle of white, and two sticky toffee puddings. Let's circle back after you've ordered an Uber Eats.
Sure.
When you've officed enough, Uber Eats, and get all your groceries delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
I don't think you'll ring me on this bit. You will on the first two. In fact, there's only one phone line free, so I don't know what I'm wanging on about. But I suddenly thought, it's not just about what it's like when your partner's on the jabs, it's about when your partner isn't. So you have really changed the way you look and the way you live. And your partner hasn't. You're looking at them very differently now, aren't you? And the statistics tell us that you are much, much more likely to be a woman, which means the partner is much, much more likely to be a man. I don't know why I just had an image of Mrs. O'Brien walking past while I'm slumped on the sofa watching darts and eating biscuits. But, I mean, if you are on a massive, you don't have to use your real name, but does it put strain? Oh, lordy. So that's factor three, isn't it? I asked that question the wrong way around. It's not about what it's like when you're, well, unless you recognise the fact that your partner is, I mean, you have done it. You've made that leap, as it were, and he hasn't. Are you really looking at him in the same way? Is it really the, oh, lordy. And maybe we shouldn't be opening that particular Pandora's box, but if you want to, then 03456060973 is the number you need. Because if you can do it, so can he. What's to stop him doing it? Why are these numbers so contrasting? Why are there 3,000 men doing it for every 20,000 women, give or take? A few hundred, either way. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. Oh, James, keep my name private. I certainly will. Last year, I was best man to a larger couple. She's lost a lot of weight and now has an athletic figure. It breaks my heart to say she is now planning on leaving him, although he doesn't know this yet. Something about the way you've written that, mate, makes me worry that she's leaving him for you. I don't know why, just when I got to the end of the message, why is she confiding this in? But anyway, it kind of speaks directly to the fear that developed during the last break. Deborah is in Birmingham. Deborah, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, I suppose what made me pick up the phone, Jack, I was just so interested in the kind of the points you were posing in the intro. I, as I said to your lovely young lady on the phone, I am on Monjaro. I've been on Monjaro since last year. I am almost 61, and I have a number of underlying health conditions.
Primarily an
underactive thyroid.
Oh, yes.
So despite not eating wildly unhealthy, my weight was continuing to creep up.
Yes, it's actually unfair, isn't it, really? Because, I mean, whatever you do, the thyroid is going to have a factor.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. You know, look at a salad and put on 2 pounds. you know, eat a salad now and lose 2 pounds. But what I was struck was, fat is a political issue, and fat is, you know, as the book historically said, fat is a feminist issue as well. I think the thing that we have to consider is I can afford it. I am not a wealthy person, but I am an employed person.
Right.
And there is a proportion of my, an increasing proportion as your dose goes up, of my monthly wage that is given over to the jab. But that proportion is then taken away to what I buy in food. So there's a cost benefit analysis bit going on there for me, not only the health bit, but I also think that because as women we have continually throughout history been bombarded with images of what it is to be beautiful, and the beauty standard changes with every passing decade.
And this feels like we're going backwards, I think.
No, absolutely. But then I also think where we feel sometimes that we're sold out. So you have big, big celebrities, and off the top of my head, I'm just thinking of somebody like Lizzo, who was a wonderful advocate for just being yourself in the skin that you're in.
Mm.
Who has lost a phenomenal amount. She's still not what I would call a skinny woman, but she's considerably less plump and curvaceous than she was.
So the ambassadorship she provided for larger women has gone.
Absolutely.
Well,
so then we feel as though we've been sold out.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I don't know how Rebel Wilson lost her weight. They may have done it naturally. Who knows? On one level, who cares?
Yeah.
The fact is that they've spent many a moment saying how wonderful they feel and how
whereas previously they had been
them.
They had been champions of different body shapes, and now they appear to have abandoned that and signed up to the kind of one size fits all culture.
Yes, and I think those messages that we get, they are confusing. And I think if you're consuming those messages, that can feed into that negative self-esteem, particularly when you are younger and if you are fragile and vulnerable. I'm not saying that I'm immune from those things.
No, I understand. I know, of course not. But, I mean, you can both recognise and remember those feelings. They're not going to be as acute at your age as they were when you were in your 20s or your 30s, but they're never going to disappear entirely. And this, sadly, is going to be the biggest answer to the question of why there are so many more women doing it than men, because there isn't a bigger uptick in obesity among women compared to men. There's just a bigger uptick in wanting to get the weight off for reasons, for some of the reasons you touched on.
Yeah, for whatever those reasons are. But I also think that I think it can become a little addictive, and you can look at some people, who I will not name because it sounds a bit mean to do that.
Yes.
In the public eye, who just look awful, and you think you've taken it too far, and why is whoever's prescribing it to you, giving it to you, still giving it to you, because you are now not healthy looking?
Well, no, but that will be a lack of regulation as well. Because, do you know, it's an odd one, this, because the other topic that Eleanor wanted to talk about this hour, Deborah, was butt lifts.
Well, I'm not having one of those.
No, I wasn't offering.
My butt can go wherever it needs to go, James.
I don't know where you sit on butt lifts, but the point is that the story in the news today is about them being unregulated and people having them in all sorts of strange places. And the same will be true of weight loss jabs. People who are beginning to look a little bit unhealthy, and everyone will have someone in their mind when you say that. It won't be a good doctor who is somehow not seeing what's happening. It will be them taking advantage of lax regulation and loose regulation, and therefore doing things that are not very good for them and not very good for their health. What about, final question, because I could listen to you all day, what about the strain it puts on relationships? Not in your case, obviously, because you're doing it much more for health reasons than anything else, but I would not be surprised to learn that people, if one partner is shedding the pounds, they're going to start looking a little bit differently at him indoors.
I can imagine that could be a problem, but then did you not fall in love with the person that you fell in love with for them as a human being as opposed to them as a body shape?
I love this question. I mean, I obviously did. I can't speak for Mrs. O'Brien, but why do so many people move on when they win the lottery, eh?
But equally, relationships break down. It's not just sometimes the thin person that wants to leave.
No.
Sometimes the fat person looks at the thin person and thinks, nah.
Yeah, well, that's what intrigues me. I wonder if that is going to be the next big story. The Moonjaro ended my marriage. I could probably get you a few hundred quid off the Daily Mail with a double page spread. Not these days, but I could back in the. I mean, I don't know how long will it take before we start reading the stories about relationships breaking down as a consequence of weight loss jabs. I don't know, Deborah. Thank you. Lovely stuff. Makes me homesick, that accent. That's two of my favourite accents of in the world on the programme today. We had Amy in Nottingham and then Deborah in Birmingham. All I need now is somebody from the heart of rural Worcestershire, and I'll have the full set. It is 11:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Speaking of butt lifts, would you like a missing word round? If you've just tuned in, we were actually speaking of butt lifts, but the missing word round is something that I've lost, so I'll have to do it after this. And this is Dominic Ellis with the headlines.
The government is reportedly considering slowing down plans to make the minimum wage the same for adults of all ages. Labour promised at the last election to remove age bans by the end of this parliament. Six Palestine Action activists are to face a retrial following a break-in at a UK defence firm last August. A jury previously failed to reach verdicts on criminal damage charges against all six at the Elbit Systems site near Bristol. The group were cleared of aggravated burglary. And inflation in the UK has dropped to its lowest level for almost a year. The main rate, which is measured by the Consumer Prices Index, fell to 3%, down from 3.4%. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunny spells, some outbreaks of rain later, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes. Through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment, Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
Okay, done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Ratimi likes Pension Bee's modern approach to pensions.
I think Pension Bee has brought pensions into the 21st century, firstly through the use of technology. Signing up to the app is super simple. Pension Bee makes me feel very confident about my finances and makes me feel like I have a plan when it comes to my retirement.
At Pension Bee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah. Much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you the new smart hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's best family electric SUV of the year. And did we mention that the smart hashtag 1 and hashtag 3 are also previous What Car award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 11, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think we might have accidentally stumbled into something rather more serious than we had originally realised. Let me read you a message from somebody else who doesn't want me to share their name, and so I will categorically not do so. My girlfriend is on these jabs, and I hate it. We've previously lost a lot of weight together by dieting. It was easy, as we were both supporting each other, and life gets in the way. Our diet stopped, and we put the weight back on. She decided to go on these jabs, and now I struggle to motivate myself to lose weight. I feel that she's cheating, and because of that, I don't have the support from her to lose weight, as we're not dieting the same. I try to make a big evening meal, like pasta, to keep me full until breakfast, but she just wants something small, usually just some chicken. I'm tired after a long day, and I don't want to make two meals, but because she's counting calories, it's easier to just make two of the same size portions of food. So I eat a small portion of food, and then I'm hungry again in a few hours, and I start snacking. It's hard to diet in a way that suits me, with someone who isn't facing the same issues and problems as me. I love her, and I'm probably being selfish, but she's making it harder to diet alongside. You don't address the question of why you don't join her on the weight loss jabs, and I'm going to delete that quickly, otherwise I will accidentally say your name when I start speaking directly to you. I mentioned my Catholicism when we first started discussing these interventions, and you may have wondered why, but Catholicism is a religion steeped in guilt. If I were to issue the phrase, if I were to put on a portentous voice and say something like, God will punish us for these jabs, would you know what I was talking about? Like, you have this idea, slightly Old Testament worldview, that progress is a reward for effort, which completely minimizes the complexity and the difficulties of weight per se, weight itself, and weight loss. It's entirely inappropriate words to use. And yet religion is obviously an entirely inappropriate tool in many contexts. And you have this sense that God will punish us for making thinness more attractive without having it in any way related to health or exercise. God will punish us for this. And then within the context of individual relationships, if one partner is on the jabs and one partner is not, the more I think about this, the more I wonder whether or not that is a recipe for some serious problems and upset and possibly even heartbreak. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. One of the people who I promised not to name has been back in touch to say, lol, it's definitely not me that she is leaving him for. So that's a big relief for everybody involved. 11:36 is the time. Anna is in Taunton. Anna, what made you pick up the phone?
Because my husband is on Manjaro and I'm not. Now, right. He has it because he's diabetic, whereas I'm not diabetic.
Yes.
He's been losing weight. I have not. We've both been bigger people all our lives.
Right.
We're both attracted to bigger people, thankfully. We have a deal. You know, I keep my hair long and a big bum, and he doesn't shave his head off and keeps his beard. but I think we have noticed, you know, he's getting thinner. He'll never be a skinny bloke.
Right.
His body frame won't allow that. I'm going to say thankfully. But it hasn't impacted our relationship in terms of how we feel about each other, how we love each other.
Yeah.
For us, it's like the other lady was saying, it's in sickness and in health, and that includes body shape. Do I feel like I could do more? Yes, I could. I've got an underactive thyroid, I've got PCOS, and women with PCOS, you know that can be an absolute kicker, and your body is working against you.
Yes.
for weight management. So, and it's just trying to find a balance with what you're happy with in your body and trying very hard to ignore the external pressures and views of how your body should be.
And those pressures are getting bigger.
They are. And I one thing that concerns me is I've noticed that we were going through a great phase of positivity and telling women, you're beautiful as you are. Mm. If you're happy in your own skin, that's great. You know, be confident to show people who you are the way you want to be. And I think we're seeing a change against that. And also that is also in the media with the fashion industry, where we're kind of going away from body positivity and back to the skinny model. And that will infiltrate all of our media and all of the media that we and young girls consume about how women should look. And I think it's a crying shame.
And there's going to be a conflation of weight with poverty as well, because there's yes. two elements to this research. One is that women are four or five times more likely to be on it than men.
Yes.
And the second, arguably long-term more worrying, is that the people living in the areas most affected by obesity are the least likely to be accessing these jabs.
And it's not to blame the NHS, because we know that they have finite budgets. And if you're going to be prescribing weight loss jabs like this, then it needs to be for the individual whose health needs it most. So I'm going to say, like my husband, you know, being type 1 diabetic and on insulin,
yeah,
et cetera,
but your feelings don't necessarily respect all of the facts that you have at your fingertips. I wonder, and forgive me if this is an inappropriate question, whether or not you feel a little bit betrayed.
Because he's on Manjaro and I don't?
Well, because he's stepping away from the enthusiasms, the shared enthusiasms that help bring you together. And he's doing it for all the perfect. That's why I talk about the difference between feelings and facts, is that he's kind of leaving the club.
I actually disagree. Now, maybe why for
good.
Other
I'm
people
glad and thank you for letting me ask that question as well.
it's a very valid question, but I think it does depend on you as individuals and you as a couple, yes. and the relationship that you have with yourselves and each other. I'm pleased that he's lost the weight. You know, he's got quite a big hernia that needs to be operated on for his health.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to get the operation unless he loses the weight. He needed to lose the weight anyway, because it helps with his blood sugars, which is, it's his health and it's long-term longevity.
So you're being entirely rational about this, because it would obviously be irrational to feel a little bit abandoned or a little bit betrayed by the fact that he is no longer your partner in whatever word you prefer to insert at this point.
It's, for me, I'm going to have to come back. We've been married 21 years this year. We have been through ups and some very, very serious lows.
Of course.
And we've learned to fight for our relationship and to communicate with each other.
Yes.
So I don't feel that we have that separation that other people may say, oh, she's just being naive. But when I sit there, I'm thinking about sitting there and I'm looking at him in his armchair and I'm going, how do I feel about the fact that you've lost weight and I haven't? Well, lesson one, I haven't really tried, so I can't judge somebody for losing weight for medicinal purposes when I haven't really tried.
No.
He's supported me in the past when I have tried. So it's not a question of, well, we are each alone in our battles with our weight. So I'm pleased that he's lost the weight, but I also recognize that it is my responsibility to deal with my own as a result.
Yes.
Now, if I choose not to, that is, again, my responsibility, and I need to live with that. And I can't be angry at somebody else who's losing weight when I haven't actually tried.
Because you're being so rational, I would find it very easy to be angry. I mean, it's in similar circumstances. And I think you acknowledge that you could be angry, but you've done the work, clearly. You're present, and you've thought it through, and you've managed to prioritize your rational side of your brain over the emotional side of your brain completely, which is great. And it doesn't make you sound naive at all. It makes it sound as if you've got a brilliant relationship that you've done the necessary work on.
I would like to think so, yeah.
Well, fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah.
Take care, Hannah. Because I've got some stories coming in from people who are not anywhere near that level of self-awareness. Well, that's not a fair way of putting it, but who are either with people or are the person who is feeling somewhat aggrieved or somewhat let down or somewhat betrayed. I don't know whether it's appropriate, given the conversation that we're having, but it's Deborah in Birmingham's fault. Here's your missing word round for today. Butt lifts being carried out in blanks, say MPs. I don't know if you want to have a guess at what that is. Butt lifts being carried out in blanks, say MPs. What's the missing word there? Couple of stories here before we go to Ludlow. My wife has lost 5 stone in a year on the jab. This is from Paul. After a 27-year relationship, she left me 2 weeks ago. I've always loved and fancied her throughout her struggles through the years, but now she's gone and I am desperately sad. Now, you don't tell us, and we don't know, whether or not this is as a direct consequence of the 5 stone that she's lost in a year on the weight loss jabs. And correlation is not causation. Causation is not correlation. But I don't think you'd be texting me, would you? If you didn't think there was at least a fairly hefty link between the two things happening. And this from Ashley. I'm a 32-year-old male. I had bariatric surgery last August, partly due to health reasons, and I've now lost over 6 stone. Since then, my wife, who's a year younger than me, has started taking Mounjaro because she said she noticed a change in the way I looked, and she didn't want to be the fat one in the relationship, and he's put the word fat in quotes. So she's now lost 4 stone on Mounjaro, and both of our lives have changed for the better. We're happier within our relationship, and we have more energy to do stuff with our daughter. This dual process has changed all of our lives for the better. So, I mean, there you get the two ends of the seesaw, really, don't you? But the impact, it's a conversation I don't think anybody's had yet. I think we're first to it. The impacts that the weight loss jab have had upon your relationship there, we've had about as bad as it gets with Paul, to whom I send nothing but love. And then about as good as it gets to Ashley, who has now found himself in a marriage where both partners have lost a significant amount of weight and their health and their time with their child has improved commensurately. It's a funny one, isn't it? It's coming up to 11:45. There's room for you to contribute to this conversation. I mean, you know how this program works. I go off down one road and then suddenly find myself turning up outside an entirely different destination 10 minutes later. But I like the conversation about the social impact of it. But that's the macro. Isn't it? Is it actually going to make society worse when women are under more pressure or feeling a lot more pressure than men to lose weight than men are? And the second bit of it being poorer people with obesity being less likely to be on the jabs than wealthier people who are not as obese or not as likely to be obese. So you've got two things going on. Pressure's being brought to bear on women and a conflation of obesity with poverty, which is a horribly dangerous thing to do. And that seems to me to be very much on the horizon as a consequence of the weight loss jabs. And then on the micro, so if that's the macro, on the micro, we have the question of what impact is it having or has it had on your relationship? So one partner goes on the jabs and the other partner doesn't. Statistically more likely to be the woman that does it and the man that doesn't. How does it change not your life or your sense of self, but your relationship with him? Or, of course, if you're the him in this piece, your relationship with her. 0345-6060-973.
LBC, this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
A number of police forces now investigating Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. Essex police yesterday as a result of activities that might or might not have taken place concerning Stansted Airport.
Well, whichever way you cut it, it's getting pretty hot for a man who apparently can't sweat.
Andrew Lowney is Royal Biographer. What do you take from the latest news regarding the Essex forces?
This is good. I didn't think this was going to happen. It does show that there is not a law for the royals and a law for everyone else.
What do you imagine is going on in the court of King Charles over this?
I do hope that the palace will cooperate. I mean, they know everything. I think the problem is that the royal family don't want a trial. They don't want this dirty linen aired in public. So I suspect we'll get to a point of charges being pressed and Andrew being somewhere in the Middle East with a country with no extradition treaty and that he won't really face justice.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets. Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern. I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do.
Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto.
from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BetVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out. They've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing. And then there's the Bet Builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Redknapp. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Forecasting sun with 100% chance of beach. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights, limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
11:49 is the time. I have quite a lot of fun sometimes with your predictive texts to the programme. Because you obviously send me something by accident, and I sit here sometimes trying to work out what it is that you were trying to say. This is beautiful from Neil, who has entered the missing world round. Let me remind you what it is. Butt lifts being carried out in blanks, say MPs. And Neil sent in Sainsbury's Carmarthen, as in and the Welsh castle, the Welsh town. And I'm thinking, what on earth is he sending that for? But happily, he sent in the thing that he'd intended to send, so I didn't have to work it out for myself. He was trying to say Sainsbury's car park, but it came out as Sainsbury's Carmarthen. And some of you actually know this, the answer to this, but the headline I'm looking at does not reference car parks. It is sheds. Butt lifts being carried out in sheds, say MPs. Now, Eleanor wanted to do this as a topic today. As in, have you availed yourself of unregulated surgeries? And I didn't think it would work, because I didn't think that, A, there'd be that many people listening to this programme who'd had, like, unregulated butt lifts. I mean, I don't know what my demographics are. But I don't know what the demographics of people who might be having unregulated butt lifts in Sainsbury's car park in Carmarthen, or indeed in sheds. And by sheds, they don't, surely. I mean, what they'll mean is a facility, like a home office that you've had put up in the garden. They're not going to be doing a butt lift next to the lawnmower under a shelf with, like, leaky tins of creosote on it or something like that. I mean, that's the image that was conjured up in my mind. Come over here, madam. Take a seat. Excuse me. Just let me move the power washer. Let me move the power washer and the barbecue charcoal. And now it's time for your injections. That's, you say shed. It's like when I used to say to you, I did the show from the shed during the holidays. And you've got an image of me sitting there between a couple of old deck chairs and one of those tennis swing balls that nobody's played for about 25 years. It's not that sort of shed. It's like a guard, I presume. Actually, give me a ring if you've had a butt lift in a shed that contained a lawnmower and some tins of old creosote. 0345 6060 973. So we didn't think that it would work as a topic. Well, I wasn't even sure that this would. The question of the impacts that weight loss jabs have had upon your life that has nothing to do with weight. 0345 6060 973. Jules is in Ludlow. Jules, what would you like to say?
James, not quite Worcestershire, but I'm in Shropshire.
I was about to say, it's just up the road, and it is also one of my absolute favourite towns, Ludlow. It's a beautiful
place.
Lovely,
lovely place.
Very, very well represented for fine dining.
It is indeed, yeah. We've got a lot of new restaurants at the moment, so you'll have to come back and have a visit.
Fantastic.
So I'm coming at this from a couple of different angles. One, how supportive my husband is, and I'd just like to caveat that with my husband and us as a family are very, very close. And he's supportive of me no matter what I do. And he's seen me larger, smaller, in between. Yes. And he loves me no matter what. And he, you know, there's no pressure there ever. But he's very glad I've started taking Wegovy.
Right.
Now, the reason being is I'm actually an ex-fitness instructor, personal trainer, huge knowledge of nutrition. And so you wouldn't expect me to be somebody that would be on these.
Okay.
But following severe illness after COVID and 3 years of getting no consistency, having operations, have my tonsils out, my constant infections, antibiotics, I was 3.5 to 4 stone heavier than what I was, and miserable. And he was so sad, because when we got together, I was the one that encouraged him to run. We used to run half marathons together. We've got photos of me finishing before him and winding him up and giving him a kiss on the finish line. You know, one of my favourite pictures.
Yes.
And then suddenly, I couldn't even go for a walk with the kids getting to the top of the stairs.
So it wasn't your size that he was responding to. It was your sadness.
It's my health.
Your unhappiness and your health.
Longevity of life was his massive, massive concern.
Really?
All he wants, all the time, yeah, he would say to me, we just want Julesy around forever.
Right.
And that, sometimes when I was trying to cross my legs to do my shoelaces up, I was struggling. And I'm only 5'2". And so that is to see your wife going through that when you've known them as one person. And not that if I changed, he would love me any less. It's that he wants me to be there forever, and he can see it's impacting my health. Spoke to my doctor, who has been really, really involved in the actual putting these jabs out there. She's the process. She's been on one of these boards and things, and she discusses it a lot with them, and she's been amazing. Now, I was a little bit short of getting it on the NHS, but she offered to support me to check before I went on them, that I was healthy, that my organs were okay, and that it wasn't going to affect me in any way, and then to monitor it as I went on to make sure that maintained the, you know, the health maintained. So she was brilliant, and I think I started them on November, and I'm, I think, a stone away from my goal, so I'm 2.5 stone lighter than I was.
Wow.
And the difference is insane, James.
Of course
I mean,
it is.
I run around, like even running around with my kids in the garden, I've actually got the inclination to do it. I'm now full-time gardening. I couldn't have done that because, and it's my ideal, my dream
job.
Well,
hang on. Why? Because you're over the health issues now. So you could have deployed the old tactics and the old training but this was, I mean, I don't want to say easier, but it was...
You are right.
Yeah.
But...
And there's nothing wrong with that.
This is my
inner Catholic. Sort of
the weight makes it so much harder to
get started.
You
try
running when you're 3 stone heavier than when you're not. And yes, of course, it's easier to take something. But when that motivation... and this is the other thing, when your joints hurt so much afterwards... because of that weight, to go out again and to keep it up and to get that consistency. And I can't tell you how many times I tried, and I can't tell you how many times it went through my head what I would have said to one of my clients. It gets easier. It's this, it's that.
How funny.
But 3 years of struggle, it had taken a toll on me mentally. And what has happened now, it's like I've reprogrammed some of those neuro pathways.
You've broken the dam, or you've broken the seal. And now, but that's the trick, isn't it?
This is
the one abiding lesson I've learned talking to everybody who's gone down this road, is you cannot do it in isolation. You have to do it in conjunction with the other lifestyle changes as well. Otherwise, You end up either going back to square one as soon as you come off the jabs, or I'm going to read a message from somebody who's ended up, or someone whose partner has ended up, not in a happy place. Thank you for that, Jules. I'll see you in Ludlow. What is it, the Ludlow? The pork pies. There's butcher shops in Ludlow that should have heritage status. Seriously, myself and my wife are 50 years old. We started Mounjaro at the same time about 15 months ago. I was 24 stone, she was 18. We were both experiencing health issues because of our weight, aching joints, swollen feet, lower legs, etc. I wanted, as she did, to lose weight for the sake of our children and grandchildren. We've had a massively strong relationship and been married for 30 years. And this is the bit that's tricky. I'm reading it out without comment because I want you to hear it as well. I've lost 8.5 stone and toned my body with gradual exercise. She's lost 9 stone but hasn't done any exercise at all. She's literally bones in a bag now and has become jealous of how I look over how she does, even though it was her choice not to help herself. There's a lot to unpack there. And this is equally interesting. Let me get this up. I've done a complete U-turn. And this is really... I'm just going to read it out and let you digest it, if you pardon the pun. I've done a complete U-turn in relation to being overweight in a relationship. Both my wife and I have collectively lost around 6 stone. I now think that in the past we were kidding ourselves that we were really happy and confident. The Western diet, along with poverty, is causing major problems with health, especially weight, which can then affect confidence, mental health, etc. I believe that we are kidding ourselves, that people aren't attracted to healthier people, especially if only one partner is committed to being a better, healthier self. That's not to say we don't love our overweight partners, but physical attraction has a part to play in this. And I would say the bigger part is the potential to have a partner who is perceived as negative and making excuses not to look after themselves. Don't apologise for your explanation. You did a brilliant job of expressing yourself there. And that sits alongside the other message, doesn't it, I think? And this the third piece of the jigsaw. It was my best friend who hated me being on Mounjaro, says Anonymous. I didn't tell her for 12 months that I was using it, and she didn't ask. I did it for medical reasons, and I now feel great. She was secretly dieting alongside me and felt that she was going mad because I was losing weight, and she wasn't. She was distraught that I was no longer her fat friend. I figured out that this is all her issue, not mine. And if she can't see that it's great for me, then she can't be that much of a friend. So there's a lot going on here. And I think we've only scratched the surface of it today. A quick shout to Dan, though, before we head towards the news. I've been thinking you were saying buttlins for the last 15 minutes, not butt lifts. I wonder what phone-in you thought you were listening to as well. If it was buttlins, not butt lifts. I got a message about Minehead. I don't know if that was from you or if somebody else thought that I'd said butt. I'm reading this message about Minehead having the best buttlins. And I'm thinking, why are you sending me a message about the best buttlins being in Minehead? And now I know it's because you thought I was saying buttlins when I was actually saying butt lifts. But I don't know if Dan sent that message as well, or if two people have been listening to a programme about buttlins when the rest of us were listening to a programme about butt lifts in sheds. But not the kind of sheds with tins of creosote on the shelf and a tatty old lawnmower just behind you when you turn up to have your injections. It's coming up to 12 noon. There is a link between this hour and the conversation I'm planning to have in the next one, and that link is pretty obvious. The head of the Royal College of Psychiatrists warns today of a sort of silent pandemic of mental health problems, things getting worse up and down the country across all demographics, and we can only really measure the people who contacted mental health services. So I want to have an upbeat conversation about this if we can.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, ministers are reportedly considering slowing down plans to make the minimum wage the same for all adults. Labour promised at the last election to remove age bans by the end of this parliament. New figures out this week show the jobless rate among young people is at the worst level for more than a decade. Speaking to reporters this morning, the Chancellor, Rachel Reeve, didn't answer whether that she's considering pausing the wage plans.
There are more people in work than there were this time a year ago. But I do recognise that there are challenges, particularly around young people leaving school, college and university. The COVID generation of young people who did miss out on so much during those years. And as a government, we are determined to do everything we can to support them.
Six Palestine Action activists are to face a retrial following a break-in at a UK defence firm last August. A jury previously failed to reach verdicts on criminal damage charges against all six at the Elbit Systems site near Bristol. The group were cleared of aggravated burglary. Ukrainian negotiators say they've had intensive and substantive peace talks with Russian officials in Geneva. They claim a number of issues have been clarified but haven't gone into detail. Plans have been approved to build seven new railway stations in Wales. It's part of a government commitment to modernise the rail network. Ministers say the project will support 12,000 jobs over the coming weeks. Speaking alongside the Labour Welsh First Minister, Sir Keir Starmer insisted it's not tinkering but long-term investment.
Yes, this is about rolling stock. Yes, it's about where the lines will be. But it's absolutely about the people all across Wales who will now have the opportunity of decent transport that they haven't had for so long.
Work is due to start later this year, but there's currently no timescale for its completion. And inflation in the UK has dropped to its lowest level for almost a year. The main rate, which is measured by the Consumer Prices Index, fell to 3%, down from 3.4%. The drop was driven by cheaper fuel prices, lower airfares and a small fall in food costs. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 117 at 10,672. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunny spells. Outbreaks of rain and hill snow. Elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12, and thank you to Alan for reminding us that the unregulated butt lifts are playing the pyramid stage at Glastonbury this year. If you've no idea what I'm talking about or why I just sniggered like a 12-year-old in the middle of reading out that text, then remember, you can rewind live radio on Global Player or on the LBC app. You can listen back. The number of messages I get, I haven't seen the one before, but you message me to say, oh, no, ignore everything I've just said. I've just realised I'm half an hour behind. So I love the idea that where is that text going? In technical terms, not in technical terms, in metaphysical terms, where are you sending that text? You're sending it to the past. And they say you can't time travel. If you can't time travel, how can you send a text to the past? Listening to a radio show 30 minutes behind where the radio show currently is, but you don't realise, so you are having a dialogue with me, to the point where you're not just talking in your own head, you're sending me messages as a response to what I've said. But you're not. You're not sending me messages as a response to what I've just said. You're sending me messages as a response to what I said 30 minutes ago, which means you are technically sending a message to the past, which I then get, which means that we have invented time travel on the programme today. We've just invented time travel, Keith. Seriously. Or maybe not. But where are you sending that message? That's what I want to know. You are sending it to the past. And yet I can get it. Despite not being in the past. Well, anyway, I thought that was diverting. You're perfectly entitled not to. The president of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, Dr. Lade Smith, is calling on the UK government to address what they describe as a silent mental health pandemic affecting people across England. They explain that people are unable to get the help they need when they need it, leaving them to suffer from depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, schizophrenia and other severe mental illnesses with insufficient support and treatment. And this, of course, affects their life chances. I've been warning you about this for some time, particularly with reference to younger people, the people who fall under the auspices of CAMHS, where you can have reached a point of almost intolerable despair before you even qualify for an appointment. Dr. Smith goes on, it is atrocious that they are increasingly only able to access care when they reach a crisis point because services are overwhelmed and under-resourced. The crisis is of pandemic proportion, and yet the needs of those with severe mental illness are rarely acknowledged. Now, I have had and will have conversations with you about that, about the severity of the experience, the condition, and indeed about the paucity of provision for care. But I've made a decision, and I'm going to stand by it. And the decision is that today we are not going to have that conversation. I am aware of, and in some ways I feel your pain, I promise. But today, I want to have a conversation about traffic moving in the opposite direction. I think it's important, and I don't think we need to wait for the right news story to do it together. And I think if we've proved anything over the last couple of years, really, on the programme, it is that we have... Don't laugh at me, all right? All right, you can laugh if you want. But we've built a community that we sometimes realise has become quite supportive of each other. I certainly feel supported by you, and you're kind enough to let me know that you feel supported by me and by each other. We built a bit of a community. I don't think that's pie in the sky. And I know that me talking about therapy has helped you to think about it, and in some cases to actually seek it and receive it. So what I thought we'd do this hour is talk about the big thing that changed. And that when you did have mental health struggles, and I appreciate they would not have been as severe as the ones to which Dr. Lade Smith is referring, but that's a spectrum, isn't it, or a graph. And if you ended up in a very bad place, you would have been in less bad places on the way there. That's just true, right? I appreciate sometimes these things can be catastrophic and immediate, but generally speaking, we would think of and we would talk of a descent or a decline into these kind of conditions. It's not a guillotine that comes crashing down. It's an incremental decline. And you can do things to stop that from happening. I think that lockdown brought that home to a lot of us who maybe hadn't even realized it in the first place. How many times, it depends slightly on how old you are, but if you're anything close, if you're within 15 years to 20 years of my age, I'm currently 54. It's very hard to believe, but I do wear tinted moisturizer. It's probably why I look so young. I don't think you ever heard the word look after your mental health growing up. When did that word start appearing in our conversation? So now you did absolute, well, I am utterly unfazed by it, but I can occasionally still see the occasional eyebrows raise among friends and colleagues. If somebody says, oh, well, I really need to look after my mental health, or I can't do that because I want to look after my mental health. Becoming a absolutely commonplace contribution to conversation. I'm looking after my mental health. You need to look after your mental health. It was not, I promise you, I didn't hear it in the 70s. I don't think I heard it in the 80s. Did we hear it in the 90s? Did we hear anyone in the 90s talk about looking after their mental health? I need to look after my mental health. Well, why do you do that? Oh, it's really good for my mental health. We talk about exercise a lot and maybe talk about it being a palliative to depression, but we'd never talk about it in terms of it being good for your mental health. Noughties? First decade of this century? Probably. Second decade, definitely. The teens, so from 2010 onwards, talk about maybe as a consequence of austerity, making everybody realising that their mental health was being impacted by external factors. The Tories damaged our mental health collectively as a nation. Then COVID came along with Boris Johnson in charge and made things massively worse for huge numbers of people. So that's interesting. I've not clocked that before, that we do that we talk now about looking after our mental health in a way that we once only talked about looking after our physical health. Why have you started exercising? Oh, I need to lose a bit of weight. Oh, my blood pressure's high. Why have you started exercising? Oh, I'm doing it for my mental health. I mean, it's a completely, you see that? That's really interesting. I love it when we stumble across these little moments of social change together. So it could be anything. It could be anything that you do. I want to know two things. I want to know what it is. It could involve professional help, or it could just be something. I remember when I told you about Big Skies. I came out of lockdown and I had a sense of a kind of psychic discombobulation. I just had a sense of anxiousness or unease that I couldn't quite pin down. I couldn't work out what it was. And as soon as I got back to Norfolk, where I used to spend a lot of time, and would still rather like to, but it's a lot harder, isn't it, when the children aren't at the bucket and spade stage of life. But I got back to Norfolk for the first time, and I got out onto the beach near the North Sea, on the North Sea, the massive beach, not one of the chintzy ones, which I also love, but one of the huge ones where you could sort of wash up a seal carcass and you don't see another human being for miles. And I just got there, and I remember I found this old tree, driftwood, but basically a whole tree of driftwood that had been bashed and battered and smoothed and salted and had become this sort of monolithic structure. It almost looked like art. It was possible that I was the first person to have seen it because, you know, it had just been washed up. And I sat on it and I just looked at nothing. And I felt the weird sense, just the nagging sense, nothing deep. This was very much entry-level foothills of mental health. And I just felt it seeping away. I just felt a peace and a calmness settling upon me that had been missing since pretty early on in lockdown. And I had a good lockdown. You know, I'm blessed with a family that gets on with each other. I reveled in the opportunity to spend more time together. I wasn't financially impacted because I could do the show from the shed at the bottom of the garden. But I had a toll had been taken. It had taken a toll on me that I had not recognised. And that, in many ways, is the very essence of mental health when it is not at crisis level. It's a toll that has been taken on you. You may not know what has taken the toll. You may not know even for sure that a toll has been taken, but you'll have that nagging sense. And you'll find yourself perhaps being sadder than you're used to being, or angrier than you're used to being. You may be less present as a partner or a parent or a son or a daughter. You may just be a little bit more distracted. Add to this the technological conditions that we talk about on a very regular basis at the moment, and you could probably imagine your mental health improving immediately if you could just get off Instagram for a few weeks. So all I want to do today, and I can't do it without you, let's be absolutely clear about that, all I want you to do today is tell me about the thing that changed. The thing that helped, let's just call it that. And it may not have helped permanently, but the thing that made you realise that you needed to look after your mental health. And I want to stress this, and I hope it doesn't sound bossy. I don't mean the bad thing that made you realise that you need to look after your mental health. I mean the good thing that you did that made you feel better and therefore made you realise that you were actually looking after your mental health. Though for me, it really was the big sky. I had missed the big sky to such a degree that if I were a piece of machinery, I'd have been making inappropriate noises. If I was a piece of machinery, I was still running. I was still chugging along, but there was a weird screech going on in the background. And you may needed to tune your ear in to hear it. You may not even know, because it's still producing the goods on a daily basis, chugga, 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 chugga. But there's just this weird little screech in the background, and I didn't know it was there until it wasn't there. I didn't know it was there till I got out and said, I can picture it now. I can feel that feeling now, and you're just there, and there's just this huge sky, and all you've seen for months, it felt like, during lockdown, is the view out of your own back window, which is your garden, and next door's two gardens. And you get out under this huge sky. Get a little bit of nature in your life and you feel the squeak silence. You feel the discombobulation dissipate and you feel some of that, whatever it was, it wasn't sadness, it was angst, begin to go. 12:15 is the time, so what is it for you? What was it that you do? What is it that you do that is a really effective way of looking after your mental health? I'm not in any way minimising the warning that has been issued by the head of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, but I can't do anything to help the people that he's talking about, except join their call for, I presume it's a he, I've not come across the name Laid before, but join, that's a bit patriarchal of me, that, wasn't it, to presume that it was a man. I can't help there, except politically. I can add your voice and my voice to the calls for the government to do more. But for people who are not yet at that stage, what is it? No biggie. What is it that you now know, and you'll use language you wouldn't have used 20 years ago, you know that it's really good for your mental health? And it's something that other people who may now be beginning to realise they could probably look after their own mental health a bit better, it's something that they'd be able to do as well. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. So it creeps up on you, but you can actually dial it back down again if you are lucky enough to have discovered what it is. And Laid Smith is indeed a woman. I've been told by many people, which just goes to show, doesn't it? You should never. It's like that old joke, isn't it, about the woman takes their child to a. A child turns up at a hospital and the opera. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The question is about what works for you, because if you tell me what it is, it might, by the end of play today, have worked for somebody else as well. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment. Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
Hey dogs, yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box, fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Daniel liked how easy it was to transfer his old pensions to PensionBee.
I've had quite an eclectic career, and with that I'd amassed pensions from a couple of different providers. I signed up using the app. It was really straightforward. I was able to give them a couple of key facts about each of my pensions, and then PensionBee did the rest of the work for me.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
I can't remember. It wasn't a joke, but it was like a riddle. And the punchline was that the doctor was a woman. So it was a man takes his child. A child is hit by a bus and a man takes the child to the hospital. And the operation is conducted by... I can't remember the riddle, but the point was that we are programmed in a patriarchy to presume that the doctor was a man. And in fact, the doctor was the child's mum. So you will remember what the riddle is. And I just did it myself when I'm reading about the president of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, Dr. Lade Smith. I very carefully said they, because I didn't know whether it was a he or a she. And then towards the end of my interminable introduction, I slipped and said he, because that is where psychologically I have been conditioned to go. And I was wrong. So there you go. I like this question, but of course my enduring fondness for it will depend not upon the quality of the question, but upon the quality of your answers. No pressure. Gavin's in Saffron Walden. Gavin, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello, mate.
Yeah, the thing that you said about sitting, looking at the big sky, having that experience, just completely touched me of something that happened a little while back. I was just taking the dog on a, I was going to say a random walk, but I'm pretty sure we knew where we were going. And
well, one of you did.
Yeah, I was led, basically. Yeah, you get it, man. You get it. And we were grooving along and took a turn that I wouldn't usually take and ended up at a basketball court that I didn't know that was there.
Wow.
And it was gated.
Right.
But the front gate was open. And it was just a pristine, lovely outdoor basketball court. I used to play basketball quite well.
Okay.
And I thought, this is brilliant, because what I could do is close the gate, the dog could run around, and I remembered the location. So next time we went, I took a ball with me. I took my basketball and went into this place, just shut the gate, let the dog off the lead. The dog was happy as... you like, and I just started shooting hoops again. And the sense of freedom and the sense of oneness, I know that's a really trite...
Oh, you see, we're both doing this. This is what we're here to resist. We're both doing the thing where we start self-editing and self-censoring because we think we sound a bit woo, a bit
yeah,
Californian.
That's
but
the problem I'm having with it, but it happens.
It does.
It just happens.
That's the point.
It's almost the opposite of a spark. It's more mellow than that. It's just like, it's like breathing out. This is what it's about.
And you don't always know until that moment, and I don't know if this is true of you, but I sense it probably was, just how tightly coiled you were until you began to uncoil a bit.
Exactly. When the spring unwinds, you don't notice because you're so tightly strung. And once it goes, you think, blimey, what have I been missing? This is what it's about now.
So you'd been in a tighter, darker place than you'd realised.
Yeah, and suddenly the sunshine comes through, the light comes through, just by bouncing a stupid rubber ball and chucking it into a hoop.
No, but it's not, is it? Because in a way, you're also communing with your younger self when you do that. You're tapping into feelings that were dormant, but that were associated with happiness. You're tapping into.
I completely agree. Yeah, it's realigning with the positivity you have.
I love this, because this is such a simple thing to do. I mean, it's got a bit of a magical element to it, hasn't it? It's got a bit of a secret garden flavour to it. It's like, I'm fascinated by it. You know, I've never been down that path before. I wonder what's at the end of it, even if you've lived somewhere for 20 years. Particularly dog walks. We get stuck in a routine. So I love that element.
That's the thing. The dog maybe knew where it was.
You see, now we're going full on. Now we're embracing the woo.
we're
loving the woo. The dog saved your soul.
Yes, it did. All right, James, that's it for me.
You mind how you go, Gavin. I love that. 23 minutes after 12 is the time. That was nice. Tracy's in Finchley. Tracy, what made you pick up the phone?
James, I'm going to be a bit emotional.
Okay.
And I spoke to your lovely researcher, but you and I go back all the way, and I mean all the way to before your kids were born, when you had to learn to drive so that your wife didn't have to drive herself when she had the baby.
I still think that was outrageous of Mrs. O'Brien. Honestly,
we used to speak probably every 10 days or so when you were just London-based.
That's right, yeah.
I first went to counselling. I'll call it counselling because I've had intermediate counselling whenever something's happened that has needed help. So 32 years ago, on Friday, I had our first son, our only son.
Yeah.
But he only lived for 8 days.
Oh, gosh.
And we have spoken about this in the past.
I thought so.
And there was complications in the labour. He was full term. He was 5 days overdue. And when I had an emergency caesarean, he inhaled the meconium that he had just pooed out.
Oh, boy.
And it went onto his lungs. And he lived for 8 days. And we had to follow the ambulance to Great Ormond Street Hospital. And we had to switch the machine off. Anyway. Right, pull yourself together. But the fact that it's actually he's going to be his birthday on Friday, you never forget.
No, of course not. Of course not.
So I had the most amazing counsellor through a bereavement counselling service and I had about 10 sessions. They were amazing.
Right.
My mum then became a counsellor.
Good Lord.
And for 28 years, she only retired about 2 or 3 years ago when she was 80. So having lost a grandson, she helped scores and scores of people through their bereavement.
And
it was incredible.
And she wouldn't have done that were it not for your family's tragedy. That was what,
No.
Oh, wow. Oh, God.
And I then went on to have two amazing daughters who are now 29 and 30.
Yeah.
When my father-in-law was diagnosed with cancer back in 2007, I think it was, and he then lived for 4 or 5 years and passed away. And the day that he died, my dad had a kidney transplant that went disastrously wrong.
Oh, blimey.
And they ruptured his bowel and tried to cover it up. And he lived for another 9 months. And then he died. So that was 2010, 2011. I then went to counselling again. And it was amazing. And I could focus on the positive, and I showed the kids. Oh, sorry, I forgot. We were caught up in the tsunami in 2001 in Phuket, the hotel was trashed. And we all went to counselling, and I even got my husband to come with.
Right.
And the kids were there, and it was amazing. And the counsellor there was, her name was Olga. She was so incredible that she could see my husband was really just wanted to get back to the office.
Yeah.
And we opened the door, and she said, "How kind of you to take time out of your busy day to join us at this session."
So she knew what she was doing.
Oh, my gosh, she was amazing. And I saw his shoulders relax, and we walked in, and we had just one session, and it was purely for me. It was only 10 years after Samuel had died.
Right.
And I thought, I've survived the death of a child. Had we been standing where we were standing on Christmas Day, me, the kids, the baby elephants, and all the children in the hotel would have been washed away.
Good Lord.
And that was the... That was what I had to get my head around. I am blessed with being a very positive person. My mum is a very positive person. I think I get it from her. And then in 2023, I was diagnosed with breast cancer from a routine mammogram and had to have a single mastectomy without reconstruction. And I cried for a week. Literally cried for a week.
Wow.
And then I thought, right, I need to get in the big guns again because this is really tough. And I had some incredible counselling through a breast cancer charity. And you know what is the most amazing thing, which is where you started, which is what is the best thing that's come out of counselling?
Yeah.
Is that both my adult daughters said, you know what, Mum, I've organised some counselling for us. But each one had independently got some help because their mum had been diagnosed with breast cancer.
And they needed... help in processing that pain.
Yes.
And that trauma. Yes. Trauma is a great word, isn't it? We don't use it enough. Yes. in normal conversation. You've just described, I mean, an absolute catalogue of trauma. But you don't, we're not equipped to deal with it on our own.
No. And I just think it's such a strength. If anyone listening out there is going through some tough times, and I know they are, it's a strength, not a weakness. Just reach out. There are charities out there, even if you can't get it through your GP. Google a charity, whether it's for cancer or for a bereavement or whether it's through your church or your synagogue or your mosque or wherever it is. Mm. Reach out. And that's the most incredible thing.
And I just want to, because the male element is obviously of interest to me.
Yes.
Men are much less likely to seek the kind of help that you describe, which you describe perfectly with the image of your husband being there in under duress almost.
He really was. He phoned me an hour before the session to say, I'm incredibly busy at work and I can't come.
I'm very important.
And I literally put the phone down and I phoned him back crying. You're and funny. I said... Please, I need you to come.
And would he now acknowledge that he needed to be there as well? Would he acknowledge the benefit that it did to him?
No, not then.
Okay.
But he is a completely different man.
Isn't that interesting?
Than he was then. And he helped me with my dressings when I had the reconstruction. So I had to lose 2 stone in 6 months to have the reconstruction so that I could have 2 boobs for my daughter's wedding. And he...
It's very thoughtful,
honestly,
of you.
I really did it, talking about your Ozempic and the
you've covered the last hour now.
I did it with Slimming World.
Right.
Susie and East Finchley, Slimming World. and aqua aerobics every single day.
I love this, because what you are telling us, I don't think anyone needs it pointing out, because it's clear, is that it can help with anything. However bad, however traumatic, however horrible it is, it is. I like the concept. I like the parallel, the allegory with a machine. I don't know where it came from when I was squeaking on the beach a few minutes ago, but if it was a machine, anything physical, and we are physical as well as mental, you have maintenance and you look after it, and it's going to run better and sound better and look better and all of those things and feel better if you're looking after it. And we are not encouraged to look after the things that Tracy has just described quite beautifully, the benefits of looking after. And taking me right up to the news as well, Trace, like the good old days. Thank you. Matt Hewitt has your headlines.
The Chancellor says she'll do whatever she can to support young adults into work, following reports ministers are slowing down, making the minimum wage the same for all adults. The jobless rate among young people is at its worst level for more than a decade. 6 Palestine Action activists will face a retrial following a break-in at a UK defence firm last August. A jury previously failed to reach verdicts on criminal damage charges against all 6 at the Elbit Systems site near Bristol. And Reform UK's Robert Jenrick says his party would restore the 2-child benefit cap if it wins the election. Mr Jenrick was speaking on his first full day as the party's economics spokesman. LBC weather, dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine, outbreaks of rain and hill snow elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene, just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island.
Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nuthatch Adventure Park. Book now at nuthatch.com.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
12:34 is the time. Two of my keenest correspondents, so keen in fact that their messages appear on my phone rather than on my screen, just drop messages on me within nanoseconds of each other, and they work really nicely together, so I'm going to read them to you at the same time. Well, not at the same time, that would be weird, but in quick succession. The first from Keith. I had a moment like yours on the beach the other night. I followed the dog into the garden to make sure he did his business. Thank you, Keith. I looked up and saw the clearest midnight starry sky I've seen in months. It took my breath away, truly, and was a mini reset. I went back inside feeling somehow that my problems had diminished. In what is an infinite universe, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. From Keith. And then in the same moment, literally, from Emma, I got this. We're still hunter-gatherers. We need the solitude of the wild. It reminds us how small we are. And yet we still have a place in the universe despite our size. Those two messages sit rather well with each other, don't they? I'm going to change the mood slightly now because I do have an unhinged headline for you. We've been a little bit delinquent in the collation of unhinged headlines lately, but thank you to the world's wrongest man for taking to the pages of the Daily Mail today to provide us with an absolute doozy.
Unhinged headlines.
Starmer is proving to be cack-handed dictator. Britain is what a police state would look like run by Inspector Clouseau. I mean, hello? This is Daniel Hannan, king of Brexit, and sundry other absolutely epic visible from space missteps and misstatements. He's a massive Donald Trump fan 10 minutes ago. But no, apparently it is Starmer who is the dictator, not the Donald Trump that he has historically expressed great admiration for. And Britain is what a police state would look like run by Inspector Clouseau. Unhinged headlines came into existence because you wonder where they'll go next with their absolute madness. This insane, and I use the word advisedly, attempt to portray things as being immeasurably worse than they actually are. And I guess you get it online now as well with portrayals of London and portrayals of an unrecognisable city or the negative portrayals of it by foreign bots and various races. I was out again in Soho last night, and I tell you, the best time, if you're not familiar with it, if you want to really get a buzz in London, a real taste of the West End, of the centre of London, then try and time your visit for when the theatre's empty. Don't do it if you need to get on public transport anytime soon. But if you time your visit for when some of the theatres are emptying, and it's all around about the same time, you're looking at between 10 and half past, really, aren't you? Maybe slightly later. And the you just have these seas of people coming from various directions who are quite often quite euphoric, or they're engaged. They've done that thing that we're talking about now. They've somehow managed to step away from the quotidian and plug into, well, what would you call it? What would you call the thing that is being plugged into? Sam calls it flow state. He says, that experience about the basketball court, James, it's not woo. It sounds to me what I like to call the flow state. Others think of it as going into the zone. I get it when I swim and sometimes when I cook, and it's incredibly satisfying, a feeling of peace that comes over you. Like the only thing that exists is you, and in that moment, right there and then, if people can find what puts them in that place and keep doing it, they're in good shape for life. And it can be art, of course. It can be theatre, it can be music, it can be books, but you've got to get there. And the more you get there, the better you'll be. Richard is in Belfast. Richard, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. About 30 years ago, I was diagnosed with bipolar.
Okay.
And I then had a series of in and out of hospital, electric shock therapy,
crikey,
talking therapy, all different kinds of medication. And they all had a short-term effect, but they didn't last.
Right.
And then 8 years ago, when I was 66, I thought I need to exercise. So I went down and I adopted a 12-week-old Border Collie puppy. And for 8 years, I have been virtually free of the effects of bipolar because I've had something that's with me all the time, that is alive, that responds to me, that I'm responsible for. I have to get up in the mornings. I have to give him his walk. I have to feed him. I have to make sure he gets his vet appointments and so on. And also, it's such a social thing, dog walking, because you meet other dog owners and you talk about your dogs. I would never have stopped and talked to people. So it's been, I gave him a forever home and he gave me back my life.
You'd go that far. You'd really just describe it
Absolutely.
As a complete junction in your entire
Absolutely.
Existence that the dog
Absolutely.
Built for you.
Yep. He saved the NHS thousands.
So this should be government policy. Get everyone aboard a collie. And we'd reduce the health budget by billions.
Yes.
I love that.
And I tell you one last thing.
Go on.
I can tell him anything and he won't repeat it.
That's what you think. We usually speak after the show. Can I ask you a slightly unfair question?
Of course.
How do you process the fact that you could have done it 20 years sooner? Do you know what I mean? Because I talk about this a bit, about, oh, God, what I wish I'd done this 20 years sooner, because then I could have felt like I feel now then. And I mean, the obvious answer to that is better late than never, right?
It was only 30 years ago that people started to say, maybe, I mean, I was holding down a good job.
Sure,
I could go into work and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
The people started to say, maybe it's a mental problem he has.
Okay.
That's why he gets so depressed, or that's why he goes off the rails.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because before that, my mother would never have thought of that.
No, of course not.
Never entered her head.
And so, it would be discouraged, actively discouraged, not just not talked about, but almost stigmatized as well.
Well, I'll tell you who had the biggest stigma about it. Me.
Right.
I didn't want to be. It's a terrible thing, a mental health problem.
Of course.
But it's done me a favour, because where I am now, I've never been happier.
Well, I didn't speak to you during that period of your life, but there's a lightness to your voice that I suspect probably wouldn't have been there if we'd had this conversation 20 years ago.
No, it would have been desperate.
There's a mischief.
How do I get out of it?
There's a lightness and a mischief in your voice that I'm hearing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
What's the dog's name?
Hector.
Hector?
Hector, yes.
What a lovely name for a dog. I just needed to know that. I wanted to come. That's the final piece of the jigsaw that you've shared with us, Richard. Thank you. It is 12:41. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Fiona is in Arrington in Cambridgeshire. Fiona, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, because I'm one of the people that the
Royal College of Psychiatrists is talking about, really.
Gosh.
We spoke about 14 years, well, in 2014, 13, when Robin Williams died.
Oh, yes.
I had a very dark journey. I was really, really very ill. But I would say that the things that have helped me in my recovery, I'm not really fully recovered yet. I'm in a halfway house between the real world and full recovery.
Right.
But there's two things that have been really, really wonderful for me. The one thing that I've always kept up is my swimming. I love swimming. It's been really good because it was when I've been really severely depressed. It's been the one place in the pool when I've just been counting lengths and just piling up and down where I've just been able to just, you know, get some peace because I'm all I'm focusing on is what lengths I'm on and what I'm doing with my stroke.
Close everything else.
Yeah, it's my meditation. It really does just, it switched things off. It was like the one place I could just get some peace. And if I couldn't bring myself to speak to people, you know, I've got my goggles on, my hat on. If I didn't want to speak to people that day, then I'd just carry on piling up and down. I didn't have to be, you could be as social as you wanted to be. So, you know, now I've got a bit better. I'm a bit more social and I will, you know, chat to people and things like that. And that's always helped me, and especially because of a lot of the medications they put you on.
Sure.
You know, they can lead to weight gain, and you have to work hard to try and not balloon.
Yes.
You know? But then the one thing that the psychiatrist had said to me is, Fiona, you know, you're really isolated. And it was true. I was really isolated. So a few years ago, I joined a choir.
Ah, I envy you. I really do.
It's been magical. It's been wonderful.
What can you describe that to me? Because you've described the swimming perfectly, and I get it, but singing in harmony with other people does something to your brain. I think. What does it do?
It really does just lift my spirit. It lifts me up, and sometimes there's things that come in music that express emotions that you just can't say in words out loud to people, and the music kind of resonates inside you, and it just sings out some of those emotions that you have without having to say them, without having to cry them out, or without having to shout them out, and it gets them out and it gives them that relief. But it's also been like the social thing as well, of just people being with people every day. I felt like an alien when I first joined the choir, because we went to the pub afterwards and I was just chatting to people, and I realised that I hadn't met anybody new in about 14 years. I felt so nervous, and I got home to and I saw my husband, and I just burst into tears because I realised just quite how far I'd fallen.
Yes.
Well, to the point where I didn't dare speak to another person.
Oh, Fiona. You could feel yourself coming back in that moment.
I can feel myself coming back. I'm not fully recovered.
No,
I'm in a kind of halfway house at the moment that recovery. But joining the choir, we've been doing events and things like that. And we've been singing all sorts of places. We go on trips and it does lift me up, and it's given me a bit more of a social life. And it's the times when I've not wanted to go, when I'm thinking I'm not in the mood, my mind's just all over the shop, I don't know whether I can face it, that's the time when you really need to go the most.
That's so well put.
It's the same thing about the pool. It's
been exercise.
I really can't. I can't face it. I can't do it.
Yeah.
It's the time when you really need to stop and you need to go and do it. Because that's when your brain really needs to switch off from the noise that's in your head. It's not even in words. It's just the weight of a feeling, which is really hard to live with.
I mean, you have smashed it out of the park with your descriptions, if you don't mind me saying so. I was absolutely lyrical, Fiona. And somehow you used words to describe feelings. And while you were using the words to describe the feelings, I was feeling a bit of the feeling. that something about singing. I can't do it. I know you always meet singing teachers who say, no, everyone can sing. And I give them a few bars and they say, well, all right, maybe not everyone. But I mean, it is something about doing it in company that speaks to the very heart of us, doesn't it? Speaks to something primal, I think.
Yeah, I think they do music therapy. There are people out there who do music therapy, but it struck a chord with me because I realised that I'd been suffering in silence for so many years, and I didn't want to cry quietly anymore. Oh. I just wanted to go out and do something and feel good, and it's been so much fun. And I love it, and it's given me that extra little bit of hope that there are good things. It's a bit like at the moment you're seeing the crocus start to come out and the daffodils and the narcissi starting to poke out. It's like I can see the start of spring for me.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I'm late for the break, so it'll be the end of the conversation until the next time. And you have just done that for people listening to this. You've just given them some narcissi and some crocuses, some little buds. You've reminded them of what hope sounds like.
That's really kind of you to say. Thank you.
It's very kind of you to do, Fiona. Thank you. It's 12:48.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Reform says it would reinstate the two-child benefit cap. Keir Starmer calls it a shameful policy, but suspended Labour MPs who voted against it. And a royal prince speaks about himself.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Okay, do emails. Burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:51. I hesitate to pollute this hour of the programme with ugly matters, but I think I should. Paris prosecutors opening two Epstein-linked probes. Police officers in this country also escalating their investigations into possible trafficking through Stansted airports. I mean, Gordon Brown has been calling upon them to do so. This story is getting bigger and bigger, and as we move forward, I'm wondering how we are going to talk about it together. I just wanted to put that in front of you, but more so the breaking news than the imminent conversations, because the conversation that we're having at the moment is, well, it's rather special, actually. I don't know really. There should be a word for putting into words things that you can't put into words, shouldn't there? There's like a German word or something like that. But Fiona did an absolutely cracking job of it. And she reminded me as well that when Robin Williams passed away, we kind of opened these lines of communication, because he brought it into the light, mental health, in ways that earlier generations hadn't managed to do. Things are getting better, but of course, as the head of the Royal College of Psychiatrists warns today, they are also getting worse, if you see what I mean. Mark is in Exeter. Mark, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James. Hello there. Sorry. I just wanted to say, James, thanks for everything you do. You really do speak for the silenced, with a D on the end, majority. Mm. You know, absolutely fantastic, so thank you.
Thank you. Go on.
Yeah. About 10 years ago, and I hope I come across all right, I got sort of a wordy dyslexia thing, so sometimes my words don't actually come out of my mouth properly.
You're doing brilliantly. Take all the time you want, all the time you need.
Cheers. Hang on, I'll take a breath.
There we go. That's always good advice there. Always remember to breathe.
So about 10 years ago, I was diagnosed as clinically depressed.
Right.
And sort of all the joy had gone out of my life, really. And, you know, typical, even the things that should make you happy weren't making me happy. I had counselling, which I know is dear to your heart.
Yes.
And everything you say about counselling, I think, is exactly the same as you. It completely changed me. Full head wobble. Made me realise that my thoughts weren't necessarily facts. There was always an alternative to how I thought, and basically I just became a completely different person. It turned out that my problem was to do with childhood trauma from my parents, and following the counselling, I was a lot better in that I was able to sort of interrogate my own thoughts. I was less bitter, though, about one of my parents. And it wasn't until, I would say, about 3 years after, and this actually sort of allowed me, I think I came off my medication, so it all coincided together.
Okay.
But I was walking through a supermarket one Christmas, and I suddenly noticed, it's like my eyes opened, it's like they hadn't been properly opened before that to anything around me.
Right.
My eyes suddenly opened and noticed the Cadbury selection boxes. and I had a feeling, I had like a serotonin rush for the first time for about 4 or 5 years. I can actually remember that feeling. And it was of pleasant childhood feelings.
Wow. Proust had Madeleines. Proust had Madeleines that transported him to times past, and you had Cadbury selection boxes.
I did. And now I always make sure that every Christmas I have a selection box. But my downfall is I can't eat them, because if I eat them, they've gone. And they're my therapy, so they just sit there in the corner of my bedroom for me to look at.
So what you're doing, you're literally resurrecting the feeling of joy and excitement that you had as a child when you had your selection box. You're just communing with it.
Yeah, and my bitterness towards my parent subsided, because at that point I remember there were some good things about my past.
But also you're looking after little you there.
Yeah.
You're getting yourself, you're looking after little. So I had something similar. Shall I tell you what happened to me?
Yeah, go on.
So the weird thing for me in therapy was the trauma of being beaten a lot by my headmaster at prep school. And I've talked about this before. I'd spent my whole life pretending I was fine. And this therapist said to me at my first session, said, well, if it goes well and if we work together, then I'll probably ask you at some point to talk to your younger self. We'll use a cushion. And you'll, the cushion will be you, and you'll talk. And I'm sitting there, mate, thinking, you're absolutely blanking. There's no way this is, I'm never going to have a chat with a bloody cushion in a month of Sundays. But, you know, I persevere with the sessions for a bit longer. Mm-hmm. And about the next one or the one after, describing being beaten at school, and she says something like, well, that must have really hurt. And I start saying, no, it didn't, because that's what I've done for 30 years.
Yeah.
And in the middle of saying, no, it didn't, I sort of stop and go, well, yeah, it did, actually. It really hurt. And she goes, all right, tell him. Tell him he's safe now. Tell him that you're going to look after him. And I start having a conversation with Mark, a cushion.
Yeah.
And that moment is the same as yours in the supermarket. Everything changed. Yeah. And so that night, I can't remember if I've mentioned this before. There's a little cinema in Brentford. It's not there anymore. It was at the Waterman Centre, and they were showing a Robin Hood film that kind of disappeared. It didn't do anything at the box office, but I love Robin Hood films, and I loved those stories when I was little. Mm. And I had the whole cinema to myself. You know when that happens sometimes. There was not another person in there. And I spent the entire film imagining that 9, 10-year-old me, the age at which I first started getting beaten at prep school, that 10-year-old me was sitting next to me watching a film.
Wow.
And that's like you having your selection box in your bedroom. It's just somehow it's saying to that little boy, you're all right now.
Definitely. The thing that I do now as well, the current tactic that I use, because I can still get quite anxious at times.
Yes, of course.
Is ground myself in the present.
Yes.
So literally, if I start to get those nervous type feelings coming on, then I will think of five things that I can see at that time. I will listen out for four sounds that I can hear, three things that you can smell, all that sort of thing. And what that is doing is putting yourself now here so that you can ignore your child voice from the past, your little boy voice from the past. It's calling out to you, warning, you know, take care of yourself today. There's something not right happening.
That's beautifully put. I'm out of time.
James.
No, you're brilliant, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
No,
yeah,
thank you.
Take care.
You take care as well. That is so strong. What amazing calls this out. And do you know, he said something about not... When he was in a dark place, he wouldn't get any joy out of the things that he not normally got joy of. And you know, I like to do this because it's one of the things that grounds me. The line in Shakespeare that absolutely perfectly encapsulates what Mark just said. It's in Sonnet 29, and he just says he's describing being well miserable. Was it? When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state. But the line that Mark just said in 21st century language, in which Shakespeare said in Sonnet 29, is this: with what I most enjoy, contented least.
Is that the sonnet that fabulous Dame Judi Dench read on the Graham Norton
show?
She
stole my act, mate. I've been relying on that
for
sonnet as a party piece for years, and then Judy who, they said.
How dare you.
It is beautiful when she does it. And McKellen just did one on an American show. He did a Shakespeare soliloquy about how we should treat foreigners, actually, and it was stunning, absolutely stunning.
While we're on poetry and the like, I'm not suggesting he is anything like Shakespeare, but Brian Patton, one of the Liverpool poets,
The Beats.
One of his very short poems is called, I think it's called A Different Way. Anyway, whatever the title of it is, when you suffer a parting of some sort from somebody, the last line of it is, lit briefly by one another's light, we think the way we go is right.
Ooh.
Isn't that lovely?
Shivers.
I got shivers.
That's
too.
That's beautiful.
I love it. It's just a way of coping with parting.
And you know, coping with the feelings that can otherwise overwhelm us, as Mark was just describing. Thank you, Sheila. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player. It's free. Or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. Best bits from this show every day. It'd be quite hard to edit this week. Not this week, today's show. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
No poetry, I'm afraid. MPs want big restrictions on who can carry out cosmetic procedures in the UK. It's the Wild West out there, so we'll hear about that at 2, as Essex Police confirm it's investigating flights by Epstein's private jet into and out of Stansted Airport. A royal prince has been speaking about himself, sadly, and his own mental health and his own feelings. When will they get it? Going to start, though, with politics this morning. It was a busy political morning. The Prime Minister out, selling a good story, or trying to anyway. And the new Chancellor, would-be Chancellor for Reform, saying they would reinstate the two-child benefit cap. Fight.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer's told LBC he'll keep his manifesto commitments to young people, following reports ministers are slowing down, making the minimum wage the same for all adults. The government is under pressure to reconsider the policy because the youth unemployment rate is at its worst level for more than a decade. The Prime Minister says he wants to put more money in people's pockets.
We know that the cost of living is still the single most important issue, and we're fighting to do whatever we can to alleviate the pressures to make sure that people can get on and live their lives in the way they want to live them.
Surrey police are urging people with information to come forward about claims of human trafficking and sexual assaults that appeared in the Epstein files. They say the allegations relate to a minor in Virginia Water dating back to 1994. Police in Bedfordshire and Essex say they're reviewing information published in the files relating to private flights in and out of Luton and Stansted airports. Reform UK's new economy spokesman, Robert Jenrick, says his party would restore the two-child benefit cap if it wins the next election. Previously, Reform said they'd end the cap for families where both parents were British and in full-time work. Six Palestine Action activists face a retrial over a break-in at a defence firm in Bristol. The group had been on trial, accused of targeting Elbit systems back in 2024. Cleared of aggravated burglary, the jury couldn't decide on criminal damage charges. LBC's Thea Rickard has more details.
It was a mostly jubilant mood among defendants, especially those still in custody, told that the charge of aggravated burglary has been dropped. For those in the dock, a more uncertain future ahead as they face a retrial.
We've learned Scotland's First Minister was given details of the charges against the former SNP chief executive before they were made public. John Swinney was told in January that Peter Murrell had been accused of embezzlement. Mr. Murrell is yet to enter a plea. Six people have been taken to hospital after two double-decker buses crashed in London. It happened in Elephant and Castle this morning. And in the last hour, the Kings said the death of Reverend Jesse Jackson is a heartbreaking loss. He says he fondly remembers meeting the civil rights leader in 2015 as they paid their respects at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial in Washington, D.C. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 102 points at 10,658. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine, outbreaks of rain and hill snow elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
We're here at the Coral Fan Derby, where racing fans are ready to play Coral's Reward Shaker. Listen to that roar! Watch this, they're all being rewarded. We've got the tweeters shaking their phones. They've won a £5 free bet. The Ford Fanatics backing those special offers for the Cheltenham Festival. Play Coral's free reward shaker to win free bets and offers this Saturday. Oh, that's rewarding. Coral, we're here for it.
18 plus, UK online only. Max one reward or offer per player per day. 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Reward restrictions, requirements and T's and C's apply. Gambleaware.org.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I was planning to have a more general conversation with you about Keir Starmer's kind of activities since last week and his announcement this morning on transport and how it makes you feel about him and them and the government and Labour, as opposed to Reform, who are always all also out and about after the announcement of some of their major front bench jobs. But then Robert Jenrick got very specific about child poverty, specifically the two-child limit on universal credit, the change that the government recently brought in, or it will only become policy in April of this year. He said Reform, if they got into power, would undo. And I wonder what you make of that, because he was asked questions as well about the triple lock And an awful lot else besides. This is Robert Jenrick, who is the new economic spokesman for the Reform Party after defecting from the Conservatives. I was also struck by how often he said, we will be Conservative. I thought, oof, risky strategy. But anyway, Aggie Chambray is here to talk about it, LBC's deputy political editor. Talk us through more general stuff, and then we can zone in on the child benefit cap, the two-child benefit cap.
So this was Robert Jenrick's first outing as the not-so-shadow chancellor, but he was, Nigel Farage referred to it yesterday as his shadow cabinet. Of course, it is not that. They are not the official opposition. In fact, far from it, but they see themselves now as the opposition to Labour, and that's how they're very much billing themselves. So this was his first opportunity, and indeed, the three other people who were introduced yesterday in those top jobs, Richard Tyswell, Braverman, Zia Yusuf, will all get these opportunities, these press conferences to lay out their policy platforms. And this was the turn on day one after that top team being announced of Robert Jenrick. And in this press conference, he chose to U-turn on a previous Reform UK policy, which was that they would keep the what Labour had done and ditch the two-child benefit cap. That, of course, hasn't come in yet. That's now not happening. So they would restore the 2017 George Osborne policy of the two-child benefit cap in full. And we can just hear a little clip of Robert Jenrick announcing that now.
As a signal of intent today, Reform is changing our policy on the two-child cap for universal credit. The policy was well-meaning. We want to help British working families to have more children. But right now, we just can't afford to do so with welfare. So it has to go. As Reform's Shadow Chancellor, I'm ending it. A Reform government will restore the cap in full. We are the party of Alarm Clock Britain. We are a party of workers and not welfare.
So last year, Sheila, Nigel Farage, the Reform UK leader, had said that lifting the cap was not a silver bullet and suggested his party wanted to go much further to encourage people to have children. Following that, he'd said that the cap would only be lifted for working families. But I think people did look at that at the time and wonder whether that was Reform UK putting, and let's face it, effective pressure on the Labour Party, on the Labour government to lift that cap, which of course now they have done.
Although they did have a great deal of pressure from within their own.
They had a huge amount of pressure. But I'm sure it didn't help to have Nigel Farage, the Reform UK Party, on
agreeing
the right,
with your backbenchers.
Agreeing with your backbenchers, indeed. Although some people, I think, at the time said actually they didn't want to be in the same camp as Reform UK, so maybe they were a bit more unsure about it. But of course, the government has now said they're going to restore that from April. And there was a question from the Daily Mirror saying if you restore the